Back from the Apple event on Monday, we are recording now on Thursday morning, so it's early in the morning, a little bit off our usual schedule, and we've got a ton to discuss. First of all, I want to mention a couple of things. So the new AirPods that came out last Wednesday for purchase are now in stores and they're shipped to customers, and so Mayo, you and I both have our own sets of new AirPods with the wireless charging case. I think that we'll discuss next week when there's no event to talk about.
Yeah, I wrote up some first impression stuff on the site, so if people really want to read it, they can do. But we'll definitely talk about it.
And hopefully I'll get around to mine as well. the next thing is that after the event, two things. So before the event on Friday afternoon, CNET had a really neat scoop, which was that Apple, they own Beats, and Beats will be making a new version of the Power Beats headphones that have the same chip as the new AirPods, so the H1 chip that they said would work with Hey Siri, and that they would be truly wireless, meaning they would cut the cord between each earbud, and Power Beats are like in-ear with different tip sizes for different ear shapes, and they've got a clip. And they've got like big, longer battery life. I think right now is up to 12 hours because they just like, they're also really kind of big, compared to like tiny AirPod stems. But that's interesting. But then after the event on Monday, when iOS 12.2 came out, 9to5Mac Ski Rambo was able to dig through the code of iOS 12.2 and find any new assets included. And he found, first, like the glyph for the new Power Beats headphones, and then he found like the animating video of the like whenever you pair or have them like checking your battery status and
the animations that you see on that like white little panel that pops up from the bottom of the screen.
Yeah, just like with AirPods or other W1 Beats headphones. So these will be H1. So you can see them in all their glory. I think in both black or white. But I mean. And he found the name. Right now, there's been Power Beats, and then Power Beats 2 and 3, and these will be out Power Beats Pro, and they'll like the CNET report. Rambo found the image that they are truly wireless. There's no cord in between, which is really awesome because that's just not existed from Beats yet. And it'll be like pretty much like AirPods because you've got the H1 chip, so you've got the fast switching between devices, the instant pairing, the iCloud sync between your devices for what's paired, and like the Bluetooth reliability that you've just not got from other truly wireless headphones. So they'll probably be a lot more expensive than AirPods, even with the wireless charging case, and they will come with their own.
That's why they got Pro in the name.
Yeah, and they will come with their own battery case for charging, which is new for Power Beats. But I can't wait for those, and hopefully next week we know more about those. If not, the CNET report said that they're coming in April, so sometime next
soon.
Yeah, next few weeks, and I will be buying. You know, I've got the new AirPods. I will definitely be buying these too because for like the times when I need to use those Bose headphones instead of AirPods, I think these Power Beats will be awesome for that. And Rambo did confirm that Hey Siri would work with these too, right? So that's new. So looking forward to that. We'll talk a bit more about AirPods and everything next week. For now, let's talk about the event. And I'll just start out by saying I got to go to the event that was at Steve Jobs Theater in Cupertino, Apple Park. So that was a neat experience. I came in late on Sunday, did the whole event on Monday, and then flew back home on Tuesday. So it was quick in and out. But it was my first time at Steve Jobs Theater. I've been to the Visitor Center at Apple Park, but not on the other side of the street where you get to go into the theater and downstairs and experience that. And so that was super neat. You know, if you know about the event already, you know that there were lots of celebrities there, including Steve Carell, which really jazzed me. It's like it does have an effect. And just like seeing the show and everything was really great. And then also having the team at 9to5Mac like cover the event in detail, and then me just update our live blog and not have to like write stories from scratch was really a good balance. So that was a terrific experience.
Honestly, you got a pretty good deal on the your first Steve Jobs experience as well, because the first time they did it was the iPhone 10 event, and that was obviously the first time ever. So that was pretty cool. It was like the coronation essentially, but at the same time, all of the gardens and the fields were all still barren and bare, and you know, the campus wasn't open. They just opened the visitor center and the theater just for the event. And then the iPhone event the next time around was pretty dull, as we talked about before. So
you had 10 and 10S, and then this is the first, this is the third event there, right? Besides like shareholder meetings and that kind of thing. But the third like press event. And so the campus was like the vegetation and everything. It was beautiful. They had like surreal music playing in the background, and it took some video just like walking up to the Steve Jobs Theater, and posted it on 95Mac's Instagram and my Instagram, and it's in our live blog too. But it was a polished experience. It was really nice. It was done well. It was a funny thing where at the beginning I had 50% battery on my MacBook Air. And I said, I hope I can get to the event. And you were like, isn't there a charger outlet? I think it's beneath the seat. And I was like, oh, you're right. Duh. So
that was pretty funny.
Yeah. And the only other thing like from the experience I take away is there was no hands-on because there wasn't any hardware to show off. And they didn't like show the new software on devices. So once the event was over, you just left or you went across the visitor to the street to the visitor center and you had like, you know, free lunch and everything.
Where did the celebrities kind of go? Because this is something I didn't really get when we were watching the stream. Like, were they in the audience and then coming up one by one, or were they behind the stage? And then so after the show, where did they go?
It depends on if they were in the show or not. So there were a number of celebrities. Like, I saw Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad on the stream. So I was in the event. I watched that like in person, and then I watched the stream of it on video on the flight home. Just to kind of recap. And I saw Aaron Paul and a few other celebrities that were not involved in the presentation, but were
attended. Chris Evans was in the audience, for instance. Exactly. But he wasn't on the stage.
Yeah. And by the way, how great was that? The day leading up to the event, the live stream.
That was cool. That
demo.
Was,
that was clever. Cool. Yeah.
Because they streamed the bare empty Steve Jobs Theater.
Yeah.
And then every now and again, they'd throw in some Easter eggs, like the curtain would open and they'd play a clip, or they showed like a missed call from Chris Evans coming in on an iPhone.
Yeah.
And then they had they would have like M. Night Shyamalan read a quote in audio form, and then they'd have Snoopy, and then it kind of culminated in a 6-hour drive from Los Angeles to the Steve Jobs Theater shown on the screen as the CarPlay interface. So it was a really cool kind of like build up that they haven't done before. Like in previous years, they've turned on the stream early to do test streams, but you could only find it if you knew like the secret URL. This was, people were meant to find it because it was streaming on apple.com for like the 2 days before. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was playful. I liked that. It was whimsy. It was good. But yeah, I saw like a video that Oprah had tweeted out where she was in an elevator with Eddie Q, who is not present like on stage but wasn't in the audience. And he was describing the elevator and how it works to go from the below Steve Jobs Theater to the top level, which is like there's no cables involved. It's like it spins around on you know, rails basically. And then Tim Cook was in that elevator with Oprah and Steven Spielberg. So I don't know. I guess they had if they were in the event, maybe they had like their own back way, or you know, you never saw the celebrities like upstairs that whenever you're waiting to go in, so they definitely have you would see Apple executives kind of lingering upstairs waiting to go down, just like talking with people, lots of like Apple, you know, leadership people, not Tim Cook, but like people that were not in the keynote. But then if they were, you didn't see any celebrities until like the actual event started, so I guess they had their own, you know, other entrance.
Special entrance.
Yeah, I'm sure of it. So, all right, let's go through the event, and I'll let you kind of drive, and then, you know, we'll have our reactions throughout the show. So, let's start it off.
So it kind of kicked off. Obviously, we had the pre-show fun stuff, and then they turned that off about 4 hours before the stream went live. You were in the theater. I was watching at home. And then they started off with a video, and it was this kind of like 1970s, 1980s, like, retro superhero kind of introduction. I see the Incredibles intro in it, but that's because, you know, I'm a lot younger. But it's because the Incredibles intro also backdates to, you know, the kind of 50s, 60s vibe. It's like this Technicolor black kind of credit sequence, and it would say like sound provided by HomePod, and
maybe
then
kind of like old
vibe.
James Bond movie, like old
Yeah. There's a real technical name for what that kind of thing is, but I can't remember what it's called. But it was kind of, and they had like throwbacks to the 1984 commercial in kind of like animated form. And then they'd throw in jokes, you know, like executive producer, Apple Bay. And then it was really cool. And it was one of their like funner videos that they've done. And especially because it didn't have like people interactions in it. Yeah. I was kind of bracing for some like cringy celebrity thing, but they didn't do that. They had this kind of like movie theater intro credit sequence.
Yeah, it was on theme. It was thematic and it was on theme.
So. Yeah,
and I saw the reaction from our Apple community is that people that love old Apple stuff or just like Apple in general, like they thought it was nice. It was nice tribute. So lots of different things. So seemed to be
well received. for the diehards, that was pretty much the rest. That was the only attention you were getting for the whole 2 hours. So you got it. You got it right up front.
Yeah.
And then obviously, Cook comes out, and they make it plainly clear from minute one that they're not going to talk about hardware, which we expected. But they make it plainly clear they're not even going to talk about other software. He literally introduced it as a services event. And they even had like a slide, which was just like the dictionary definition of what a service is.
Yeah,
it's about helping people.
Yeah, it was a very generous definition of services. Service. I'm sure you could use one that was less generous, but sure that they handpicked that one.
And they kind of called it. They kind of framed it as world class services event, and that is what Apple is all about. And something interesting they did is they kept coming back to these same, like 5-6 bullet points throughout the show.
Yeah.
And he said it up front. He gave an example before about how you take photos on your phone and it would upload through iCloud.
Which, by the way, iCloud Photo Library, like if I'm ranking Apple services that I rely on, like that, I would pay $10 a month for that alone, because like to have my photos from my iPhone go to my Mac and like be saved offline and
I'm backed up.
All the edits and organization, like that's the main thing I pay for iCloud for.
I basically pay only iCloud just for the photo storage. Yeah. So you essentially already do pay $10 a month just for iCloud.
Right. I could back up to iTunes and do it wirelessly or use iMazing and stuff like that. But iCloud Photo Library, it's
aces. And it's been rock solid for me for pretty, almost as soon as they launched it. Yeah. I've never had a problem with it. Yeah. Yeah, so he kind of used that to explain what a service is essentially to the mainstream crowd.
Yeah.
And then he made some line that was like, most of our services are free. I wasn't quite as on board with when he said that. I mean, I know what he's getting at, because obviously like iMessage, they provide free, FaceTime's free, and you get basic iCloud stuff for free. But this all kind of circles around the whole, what we're about to lead into is these are four different ways for you to give Apple money every month.
No one would ever pay for Find My Friends, but it is a great service as part of the iPhone experience.
Yeah, so. And you're paying for it in the phone. Like it's not, yeah. It kind of put a bad taste in my mouth, because what's coming next is, you need to pay $10 a month for this. Yeah. But hey, that's how they spun it. And again, they had these kind of like bullet points of, and they had little icons for what their services represent. And it was easy to use, attention to detail, private and secure, which they definitely pushed on every single time as normal.
Yeah.
Expert curation, personalized, and family sharing. So those were kind of like the tenets of what they wanted you to kind of judge the stuff on. And obviously the one that they don't mention is, it makes Apple money, but that is the preface.
Yeah, I mean that's part of Apple being a company that's in business. So one of the things that I thought was neat was they had this slide where they showed the Apple Watch, the iPhone, the iPad, the MacBook Pro, and the iMac. I think like from the side profile, then they turned around and they were kind of color, like they've done that before where it's like black slide, white silhouette of the products, and there's even like an Apple shirt you can buy from the Apple store in Cupertino that looks like that. And it's like, this is the lineup. And it's like from smallest to largest. But this time they were like colored, which I thought was like a modern, a neat take, a fresh take on that, like that visual. And then they turned the products around, and the Apple Watch had iMessage on it. The iPhone had group FaceTime with everyone using Memoji. The iPad had Apple News. The MacBook Pro had Maps, because that's where you navigate on as your Mac. You don't use that on your phone. And then the iMac had photos, and they were editing a photo. And I thought that was neat. It was like, it kind of set the theme for the event for me, which is that this isn't about new devices. We have new devices all year long. But this is what we're going to do with those devices that we've already got great hardware out there. We'll have new hardware later in the year, as always. But this event today is about what you do on those devices. And it kind of set the theme. Like last year, they used the March event to not do a whole lot new in education, but just to say, like, this is today we want to talk about education, like what we've been doing in education and what we're going to continue to do there. And that was the same thing this year. It's like, there are new services, but they just framed it around services, and that there are lots of existing services. Here are some new ones, but it's not like Apple's first service ever. It's just a way to frame the event, you know, and I thought that was nice.
Yep. So that leads into the first section, which is Apple News. Mm-hmm. And they say it's the number one news app on the phone, which doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
It's like built in, like, what you're going to do. Yeah. I think they even said it was like the number one mobile news app. So again, you know, iPhone usage is very high. So it's par for the course. And we know where this is going, right? There's been so many rumors. And then sure enough, Cook says, I love the feeling of being at the newsstand.
Newsstand.
And he shows his massive image of these, you know, all these magazines on the screen. And it's, you know, I can only get one or two, but what if I could have them all?
Whatever.
and that's the announcement of Apple News Plus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
The Plus, I was already reeling. I was like, are they going to do Plus?
So we were waiting for the name to be Apple News Magazines because it's based on Texture, which was just magazines. But then that name would be kind of weird because we also knew that they were trying to pull in newspapers too. And then we also learned online publications. So Apple News Plus is all encompassing. Like, it's better than Apple News Magazines, I guess, because it is more than that. It's just like when you've got iTunes as in music and you've got all this other stuff in there, it doesn't make as much sense, or Apple Music with some video stuff in there too. But, yeah, I mean, the name will grow on you. It could have been a lot worse, I think.
Yeah. And it's interesting how they're iconographically doing it as Plus as the symbol, not writing out Plus, which is how they used to do like iPhone 6 Plus, for instance. And every single one of these now is Apple logo. News Plus. Now, like the Apple Beats logo team, now Plus.
The Beats team does Plus symbol for the Beats Pill Plus, even though they've and Apple Care is written out, right?
Yeah.
And maybe sometimes they use a Plus for like a logo.
Yeah, they use a Plus all the time for that, because that's kind of like the logo for it is the Plus.
Yeah. Yeah. But then the Beats Pill Plus is always the Plus symbol, so there we go.
Yeah. It could have been a worse name. I'd probably prefer if they'd have written out Plus rather than the symbol, because it kind of looks a bit weird on the slide, but it's really compact, but it's fine. And they show a video. This is classic Apple fashion, right? Celebrating journalism. They have this, you know, like 3-minute video of everyone doing these adventures and taking all this incredible photography for like National Geographic. And all these writers are talking about how journalism is so important. And they want to contribute to that. Roger Rosner comes out to present the News Plus service. We've seen him before. He's done stuff like the iWork announcement before at certain events. He kind of runs applications. He announces the service. He says that you can access 3,000 magazines. No, 300 magazines.
That's what he
that
said.
That was like the one slip up in the entire like 2-hour event, which is not bad.
Yeah, not bad. Yeah. The thing, like 3,000, when I heard it didn't sound wrong, but I guess it would be a lot of magazines. But it wouldn't be a bad goal to have like more than they have now, because they don't have everything. They've got the big names. They've got like what Texture had, I guess, and maybe some more stuff there. But like there's one magazine, Runner's World, that I would care about using this service for, and that's included. But then like there's a music magazine called Alternative Press that kind of has like the music that I like to kind of keep track of, like let them do that for me, and that is not included. And so if it's like one magazine I care about, one that isn't in there, and then the rest would just be like maybe I'm kind of discovering stuff. I don't know if it's worth it, but I hope that they pick up more magazines in the future.
Yeah, there's an interesting like dichotomy there in that if you're the publishers, you almost want less magazines in the service, because we've obviously heard the rumored payment model, which is Apple keeps 50% and then the other 50% is split up based on usage. So in that model, you make more money when there's less publishers.
And
the
fewer options
service.
You have, the more likely it is that your magazine will be tapped on.
Yeah. And like, because either you have 5,000 magazines and you only use like the one, you know, the Runner's Journal, and that's it. And that means the Runner's Journal is going to get all $5 of that amount. But as soon as you have more choices, you're more likely to get diluted and your amount of money is getting split up, especially as the way the News Plus like app presents this is it doesn't just show you, you know, subscriptions to magazines as like a bundle of, you know, this is this one magazine, this is another. Mm-hmm. It kind of blends them together in a similar way to what Texture used to do, where you can see like issues, not just issues, but individual articles from different magazines like next to each other, in the same way that the main Apple News homepage mixes together sources of all different kinds into, you know, like a newspaper front page of different sources on each article, right?
Yeah.
Like it, you don't just see one website at a time. You see all them all blended together. And you, on the News Plus, you can, you know, specifically say, I just want to see this magazine's content, but they want you to discover more. And it very much services many different publishers at the same time, all kind of intermingled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing I will say, too, is I've still got to write my kind of write-up about the event from my perspective. But the topic of digital magazines versus websites, like, you know, one idea I saw was that what's the point of magazines, even digital, if you've got the whole web, which has everything? And to me, the appeal of it, and I don't know if this would prove out as, you know, practical in use, but the appeal would be that the web is, and I kind of hinted on this like last week when we talked about magazines or the week before, but that the web is like everything that you've ever published. It's the entire archive, and the homepage is like the last, you know, 20 things you've published. And a lot of it is like because you've got to just keep publishing, you know, at a certain rate to be competitive. But it might not be like the last 20 things you posted might not be the best content from the last month that you published. And so the idea of a magazine is that like it's not up to the minute. And so it can be the best from the last month curated. And so it's not just like what's the latest, but it's the most quality from the last, you know, since the last issue. And so the appeal for me is that maybe the content in the magazines, you know, and this could be true for print magazines too, but that it's, there's less to read and it's higher content. That might not be true. Like as I've been like flipping through magazines and Apple News Plus, I found that there's a lot of similarities to like what gets published on the web and what's in magazines. And I imagine everything in the magazine is also on the web for the most part. But it's just, you know, there are fewer articles to kind of navigate around in a magazine.
Yeah, it's, I think it mirrors the web, and there's really, really high quality magazines, and then there's really, really, you know, low quality stuff.
But that's true.
In general, you're right in that there's less time pressure to obviously publish stuff. And in general, these magazines, like, hire journalists that aren't just, you know, like reblogging is a lot less essential in the magazine world. It's like a different ecosystem, right?
Yeah.
So you tend to get a lot more original journalism, and they get time to like take their care in writing something, you know, really, really good. And theoretically, you can put in really nice layouts and designs and have good imagery.
Yeah,
like and of course you also have the value play of, you know, if you look at these websites that, because obviously a magazine can make a publish a website, but a lot of these websites do not make any money, and the advertising business is not doing great. So this is an alternative way for people to monetize, is, you know, digital magazines, essentially, whether you want to call it a magazine or whether you just want to call it a subscription. Like, it's the same kind of difference, really. Apple likes to brand it as magazines because that's what it comes from, and that's where a lot of the content comes from. But down the road, News Plus could just be, you know, all the online services in a different format with more time to write the articles. Like, the whole magazine concept doesn't have to be stuck to. It's not skeuomorphic, and as we've already discussed, it will show you an article from, you know, Edge and an article from Runner's World next to each other, just depending on your interest. Like, it doesn't have to be rooted in magazines forever. That's just where they started, because obviously they got the acquisition, which gives them a good base of content that's going to come out regularly.
Yeah.
But it definitely is just about, like, you know, you're paying for more premium news, and there's going to be, you know, there's obviously always a scale in between there. So the whole, like, oh, it's pointless, you can just read everything on the web, is, I think it's a short-sighted vision. Like, I read a lot on the web at the moment, but if there was, you know, accessible and relatively cheap alternative options, I definitely consider it, for sure. Because, and again, it's not just, you know, the 300 magazines that appear to be ripped straight out of their previous Texture deal. They've obviously then gone beyond that and added some more specific newspapers for, like, Canada, because they're going to launch in Canada. And then they have some digital subscription content from even, like, TechCrunch Extra, like their premium subscription service. The articles from that will show up in Apple News now with Apple News Plus.
That's new for TechCrunch, to have a paid version of their site, and then now it's included in Apple News Plus. So
they launched, I think they announced it like last month or something, so yeah. It's only been going very short while. And they've kind of wrapped themselves into that.
Yeah, the other one that you've got in the notes is the Skim, which I'm not familiar with, but, you know.
People clap when they said the Skim, so I don't know. It must be somewhat popular. Mm-hmm. But I haven't heard of that one either. But again, they also said that there's, you know, there's a discovery element to this. Like, the web is really, really big, and finding the signal amongst the noise is hard. So if you can have something more locked down, which kind of ideally would only show you good stuff, and I'm not saying it necessarily does, but in the ideal world, it's the Apple News Plus service is mainly going to show you, you know, the good stuff. So you can feel like you're getting a more premium experience. And even if there is some cruft in the bottom, you just never have to look at it.
Right.
So there is definitely appeal. And then obviously on top of the digital descriptions, they've also added like the Los Angeles Times, which is a US newspaper, and the Wall Street Journal content as well.
Yeah.
So, and the journal, you know, if you buy the journal standalone, it's a lot more than $10 a month. So there is a value play here. Obviously, you're not. There's a debate about how much of the journal you actually get in this service.
Yeah.
It seems like everything is put in there, but it's almost made difficult to find, which is kind of a weird proposition. The Wall Street Journal like execs were basically saying Apple News is going to promote the mainstream information, but then the business news will be found if you can search for it, but really nobody's going to find it because they're not going to promote it. So people are still going to subscribe to the Wall Street Journal anyway.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions about the service too, like how it will work. And we'll figure this out like as we get to use it and as we get away from the event. But like, for example, when a new issue of a magazine comes out, do you get a push notification or is it up to you to dig in and like look for it, you know? I know it would be serviced on like the front page of Apple News Plus if it's like new issue, and it would be downloaded in the background, I think. But like, do you get a push notification for like if there's a new Runner's World today? Do I get an alert about that, or do I need to learn the schedule, the release schedule? You know, and like right now in the app, there's a new badge on almost everything. There's a few magazines that have a date of like March something in there, and then also like the question of, does the service include back issues? So for right now, like all I can see, I think, is the current issue of Runner's World, and not previous issues. And I think that going forward, there'll be everything from March 2018 on, but I'm not positive about that. And I'm not sure that it was clear in the presentation either.
Yeah. And how long does it stay around for? Like, does it stay around for, you can get the last six issues, or are you going to get, in a year's time, you're going to be able to read every single issue from now till then?
Yeah.
Because that definitely tweaks the proposition model with me. For like, I might subscribe for a month maybe when I'm going on holiday, and then I've got loads of stuff I can read, even if it's from a few months ago necessarily. Yeah. But mm-hmm. if it's only the current stuff, it's going to be more harder sell. And especially with like the downloading thing, their wording of how it was downloadable was very obscure and very like ambiguous. They said the magazines you read the most will be automatically downloaded in the background for you. Mm-hmm. But can you like tell it, I want this magazine every single issue to stay on my device and never leave, and I always want this one?
Yeah.
It's not clear to me at all. Like, you can, in Apple News Plus, you can like stuff and you can dislike it, but that doesn't necessarily mean download explicitly. And
yeah, I'm not sure that they give you all those controls. That
yeah, I don't think they do. I mean, this, as we'll, Apple News Plus is only available in the US and Canada at the moment.
Right.
And they said it's coming to UK and Australia later this year. So all I can go on is what I can see on the website and the keynote, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to try out a bit, but you have been traveling back from Cupertino, so it's also a bit, you know, there's time pressure there as well. But it's weird. Like, I think this might be similar to how Apple Music launched in iOS 8.4, and it was very different from, they like redesigned it like three times since then as they kind of honed in on exactly what the service is going to be. This current effort is very much like, we took all the texture infrastructure and put it on a new tab in Apple News, let publishers release Apple News format content if they want to, and then we put some pretty covers on it because you can get like animated video covers, and that is generally the gist of the entire service. I think that's fair. And I think a big question with the appeal of this service is how much of it will just be texture style scanned PDFs and how much of it, you know, will be the more optimized Apple News format style content. And from what we've seen on the first round, there's quite a lot of PDFs in there. There are a decent number of, you know, the other type, but I think there's questions because you can do like an Apple News format layout that is very lazy and very obvious, you know, just put the text in a column and you scroll and there's a couple of images. which is fine, I guess, but and you can change the text, and it's probably better than having to zoom and pan around on the phone. But at the same time, if you're trying to give a magazine experience, you want something a lot more, you know, like custom design, with like a human touch to it, and not just like the Safari reader view in the browser.
Yeah,
and then you do have a subset of the magazines that are doing, you know, the all-out kind of experience, like the National Geographic, which they featured on stage, and like Wired, which are doing, you know, they're taking full advantage of it, and it's good. But there, I'm worried that they're only doing it for
launch,
you know, the launch. Yeah, exactly. Like the first episode to be flashy, and then if it doesn't make them any money soon, they're just going to go back to doing PDFs only. And then, you know, the value proposition there is harder. I don't know. You've obviously tried it out. So,
again, just using Runner's World because it's a magazine that I'd read otherwise, is they had a cover where it's got running shoes animating in, like, diagonally flying in. And so it's one of the live covers where it's like you've got shoes going vroom, zoom, zoom. Like it changes out the shoes, you know, and you wouldn't get that from the print version. And it's a neat gimmick, but like it doesn't really add value. But then you open up the magazine, which I imagine if they have a live cover, then they've also like worked on the magazine content itself, and there's just the one issue. So it isn't like they're like, it's like a backdated issue. And it was pretty good. Like you're mostly like vertically scrolling stories, even on the iPad. There's no like side by side left, right page. And so one column I was reading was referencing a visual on the right of the page, but that was actually scrolled down below. So, you know, that wasn't ideal, but that's maybe kind of an edge case. But
so then that's also, like kind of copying what obviously the magazine, you know, copy would be.
Yeah.
But if it's reflowing it into this kind of more basic Apple News format layout, it's not going to have that maintained. Obviously, they could do, you know, a more complicated Apple News format layout, which is, you know, multi-column and retains that kind of, you know, spatial two-dimensional appeal of like a magazine layout, but that requires, you know, a lot more effort, money, engineering, and it's not obviously if you're a publisher, you're not going to want to invest all that on day one before you know if the new service is actually going to be any good or not, or like, get traction.
My instinct when I was reading was to turn the iPad into landscape mode, like maybe there's a side-by-side view that this will now make sense with, but it didn't happen. It was still vertically scrolling, but that was kind of an edge case. The other thing is that there's a couple of things here. Like magazines have ads, and I guess Apple kind of describes the service as ad free, but you still get the ads even in the Apple News format magazines. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that the magazines, even if you're paying, like you pay for a magazine in person and there are ads within that, just like you pay for cable TV and you've got cable TV ads. I think that's fine. And in many cases, the ads are pretty good because, like, again, Runner's World, they know who the audience is for the most part, and you can advertise like fitness gear. You're not going to see like random unrelated things that you're not even interested in. So in some cases, the ads are kind of informative. So I don't mind the ads, but there's a difference in a magazine print ad that you can read and then that on the iPhone that you need to like pan and zoom to even make out. And in one case I saw an ad that was text-based, and you just couldn't make out what it said without like panning and zooming every line. And it just, it's like, in that case, it's like, this is not the native format for this content, like at all. You know, maybe you'd have a video instead of what this is, but, and that's where it feels like this is not optimal. And then there's also the value of it all. Like if you know, the pitch at the start from Tim Cook was, wouldn't it be nice to have all the magazines when really we could only get one or two? And I'm not sure that's a great pitch, because even if you had the time for all the magazines, would every magazine be of interest? Like magazines are pretty specialized. And so you've got to have, you know, 100 to 200 specialized interests to care about those magazines, plus the time to consume them regularly.
Sure.
And so I think like 1 to 2 might actually be kind of normal, even if you could have all the magazines. Like if you pay for Apple News Plus, you might just do it for 1 to 2 magazines, you know, plus the deal gets way more, it's way better when there's a lot of newspapers too and online publications, and you know, it diversifies from just magazines. But when you're looking at like just magazines, I'm not sure that that's a great pitch to say, wouldn't it be nice if you could have all the magazines? Like, no, it might not be nice. It might be a burden. And then if that's the case, I looked at the price of like one print magazine. So let's say you want to forego the benefits or the hassle of digital and just have an annual subscription. And it was $12 a year versus $10 a month. You know, granted, it's different what you get access to, but in many cases, like it's more optimal for the format. And then again, it's $12 versus $120 in this case. So it's kind of different. So. It's tough.
If they had like a Apple News Plus variant, which is you can have five magazines and it only costs you $4.99, I feel like a lot of people would do that because you kind of hone in on what you want, and maybe at the end of every month you can swap out your five if you know what I mean, and you get five at a time.
And what about cross platform? Like, so Apple News is only on iOS and the Mac, so it's Apple's platforms. Texture was on Android, and I think I saw it's going away in May, so they're not going to keep operating it. It was also on Windows Phone, which I think went away already just because
last year,
even if they weren't bought, they would have killed the Windows Phone experience. But so there's just not going to be a solution on Android like after May, is that right?
That is what they've said.
Okay, all right.
I mean, it seems a bit weird to me. Like, why did they keep the Texture app around all of last year and you know, the first half of this year, and they didn't kill it off?
Maybe obligations. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. It seems a bit weird. I who knows how many subscribers they had on which platform? Obviously, if they didn't have very many on the Android one, they're just going to cut it off and leave it on the cutting room floor.
That's true. And that if it's like a hit on iOS, then they might want to, and they want growth, and they can explore other platforms too.
Obviously, Apple Music didn't exist before on Android, but Beats Music existed. Mm-hmm. And I would have no doubt in betting that Beats Music had a lot more subscribers on Android than the Texture app did on Android. Because before Apple acquired Texture, I'd never heard of it at all. Yeah. So it must have been much smaller scale.
I heard of it, but just from like political podcast ads, you know, where it fit, you know, because the idea was you read political magazines. And so it was a good advertising fit there. The Beats thing, so there was Beats Music on Android. And whenever they did Apple Music, it wasn't like they just changed the name of the app. It was a wholly new app. And you got features like you would never get iCloud Music Library on Android if it wasn't for the Beats history there. So it doesn't seem far-fetched that they would ever do Apple News on Android. It's just maybe the
prioritization.
It's like you only get Beats One, the live station, for free if you're not a subscriber. But with Apple News, as they kind of market this, you get a lot of features for free from Apple News, and then Apple News Plus is like the other stuff. And so would you give away all that on Android for free, or would it just be Apple News Plus on Android? And maybe that's the tricky thing there, is that they've not worked that out yet, and they don't like the answer that they'd give away a lot of stuff for free, and that part of the Apple News pitch is buy an iPhone, an iPad, a Mac, and then you get all this curated Apple News from us, from our editors. And if it was a totally separate app, then it would be easier to do. But because you'd give away a bunch of stuff on Android, they don't want to do that.
Yeah, this is definitely like their first year of the services strategy. And it doesn't mean they're not going to do an Android app in the future by any means.
But I would have guessed that they would have launched with one. So I was a little surprised that they didn't. But
because Texture has stayed around, I was fully expecting them to say, and we'll have Apple News and Android as well. But obviously it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And the $9.99 a month is how much it costs, obviously. But you do get family sharing included in that, which is nice. So you can share up to with six people on your family.
Yeah,
for no extra
Apple
charge.
Music is $9.99 a month for an individual standard, or $14.99 a month for up to six people. Apple News Plus and the other services that we'll get to eventually are one price for an individual, and family sharing just shares it with no extra cost, which, you know, is probably what they have to do, because these aren't as compelling as music subscription services, I think. But it's a nice touch. So.
Yeah, and I will give it a go. You get a 3-month trial, only 1 month, not three, like Apple Music again, for when it comes out later this year in the UK.
Yeah.
I am not bullish on me sticking with it full time at the moment. Maybe if, like, you know, the rest of the people in my family also are interested in it, then, you know, it makes more sense. But as an individual, I feel like $9.99 a month's too high just for me.
So I
have to, like, talk about it. I don't know. What's your kind of position? Do you think you're going to subscribe to it?
I'm using the trial now. I mean, largely so I could talk about it. But there is some value there. It's like, oh, now I can read some articles that might be online, but, like, they're not organized in this way. And I do like the way that pages are laid out, and, like, you know, just something basic is like, here's a gear recommendation in an article. But it's so simple. There's like so few words, but there's images and there's layout that makes it rich. it's kind of given me ideas for like publishing on 9to5Mac. It's like, I should read more magazines just because it gives me an idea of like how I could bring that back to what we do, you know, and not just look at blogs as like, you know, the model. But honestly, it's kind of making me think maybe I just want like a print subscription to Runner's World for $12 a year or two, for 2 years. And then not do that. And the other thing is that the free trial, they've got some custom stuff in there that if you cancel before the trial's over, your trial ends. Like you can't sign up for the free trial and then on day one also unrenew it so that you don't get chargebacks in it. They're kind of aggressive there, which is not kind.
And it's kind of confusing because it's inconsistent with how Apple Music works, and it's inconsistent with how, you know, in-app purchase trials work, because they expire at the end of the month.
And so I saw they had a custom alert that's like, are you sure you want to lose access to 300 magazines? Like they, yeah, they're doing some custom stuff there that's, I think, unkind and unfair compared to what other services.
And I think in a similar vein to trade in your iPhone for $449 and get a 10R, that kind of banner advertising, I kind of feel like that's going to seep its way all through the free news app as well. So like if you came across the Runner's World website, you now get a banner when you click on it. You can get Runner's World magazine for $9.99 a month. So that is definitely something I'm watching. Like, you want to see how much are they compromising, you know, their software and hardware offerings because they're trying to push these services. And obviously, if you push it too far, people are going to reject it and ultimately leave iOS. Yeah, so there's definitely careful balances there.
I have seen banner ads within Apple News now for the Apple News Plus, which I think is totally fair, because it's like you're using the app, you like it. There's more you can get out of it if you pay for it. And there's the free trial is nice. Like if you had to pay up front, like I don't know if I'd try it, but that'd be it. but I think it's totally fine to advertise within the Apple News app for the paid service too. Like that doesn't feel scammy to me. I think that's fine. It's kind of like when you go to the iTunes music store on iOS and there's like
bands for Apple Music.
Yeah. I think that's fine. This week, 9to5Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Captera. We've all read some surprising online reviews, right? Whether you're trying to get a sweet deal on something you've been saving for or trying to find the best happy hour in town, it's generally a good idea to read the reviews first. So why should finding the right software for your business be any different? Read thousands of real software reviews and find the right software for your business at captera.com/happyhour. Captera is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solutions for your business. Again, totally free. And with over 700,000 reviews of products from real software users, you can discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Simply search for more than 700 specific categories of software, everything from project management to email marketing to yoga studio software. No matter what kind of software your business needs, Captera makes it easy to find and discover the right solution fast. And since Captera is totally free to browse, you can be empowered to make the best decision for your business without needing to ask your boss for a penny. No need to feel like you don't know where to start. Instead, you can be the expert on what software is best. Join the millions of people who use Captera each month to find the right tools for their business. Visit captera.com/happyhour for free today to find the right tools to make 2019 the year of your business. captera.com/happyhour. Captera. That's captera.com/happyhour. Our thanks to Captera for sponsoring 9to5Mac Happy Hour.
So that was news. And then Tim Cook came back out and introduced the Apple Pay section.
Which, by the way, leaked pretty well, like from a year ago, Wall Street Journal report.
Yeah. This credit card thing has been a long time in the works. Yeah. He started off by a little announcement that Apple Pay Transit is coming to Portland, Chicago, and New York City, which is nice. Mm-hmm. And then they are... one good quote is he said that there's 10 billion transactions this year, and he's looking forward for a future where all payments are made this way. It's like
there will be 10 billion. They're approaching that, and that it will be. There was a quote on like an earnings call or something, you know, where Tim Cook said he thought Apple Pay would be further along by now than it is. You know,
yeah, Yeah, and obviously they make, you know, cents on every purchase, so right. they definitely like it when every purchase is made that way.
Right.
The thing about Apple Pay, though, is because it's free to the customer, I don't really care what, you know, business transaction happens on the back end. They can make money or not, I don't really yeah. care.
Right.
But it's obviously cool. they like having all payments going through their services.
I liked the chart where they showed adoption in the US for Apple Pay, and then, like, Europe, and then Australia was, like, 90% or something like that.
99% Australia was, yeah.
It's awesome. I need to go there.
Yep. So after the transit stuff, it was the Apple Card announcement. And he brought out Jennifer Bailey, who's talked about other stuff about Apple Pay before.
Yeah, and she's done past Apple events, and she's also done just like e-commerce or commerce in general events on behalf of Apple. Mm. And she seems like just totally professional.
She knows what she's doing.
Yeah, like this is her world, you know.
Yeah.
Not just the Apple part, but just like the banking and commerce kind of things. Like,
yep.
You know, she's not new to this at all.
And the kind of pitch is that they've completely rethought the credit card.
Yeah, which as heavily rumored, like from, I think it was the Wall Street Journal who seemed to scoop this pretty well. And then Guy Rambo found some assets in code that also showed like what they were describing, but visually. I think everything that was rumored, like there weren't really any surprises here. It's just like that, yep, that's what they're doing. It's actually a credit card. It's and my thing was there's the Barclays Bank rewards card, Apple rewards card. And I don't know, like I've got in my notes here for my coverage, like how did that get introduced when it was new? I don't even know like what year it was. But I imagine it wasn't this, you know, event worthy.
I'm pretty sure it wasn't announced on stage.
Yeah. And there's just more custom stuff here that they're doing with this card. And it's Goldman Sachs' first consumer. You know, they're an investment bank and it's like, this is like their first like consumer credit card. But Apple's like leaning heavily on like, yes, we have a credit card now. They don't do this with Barclay, with the Apple rewards card. Like this is, they're owning this way more. Which probably
it's literally on their homepage. Like it gets a whole sentence at the top row.
Yeah. And I don't think it was just because they had an event to fill.
I think it's kind of cool, but it's so weird saying like Apple credit card, like brand is hard to gel together though.
Being in the room, it was super weird, like everyone applauding for a credit card and just traffic like from the event day, like I guess you'd rank it as like the live blog, like the homepage, the live blog, the software update stories are always do well, but like in terms of like what was actually announced, the Apple card was like the top like traffic story of the day until we had like the Power Beats leak. And I saw Neil Patel at The Verge tweet the same thing, that like the Apple Pay or Apple card was the top story from the event too, which being at the event, it was so weird. Like it felt kind of cultish having everyone clap for a credit card. And I found out at the end that I was actually surrounded, like Tim Cook says, stand up if you worked on any of these projects, and like everyone around me was an Apple employee. And I was just like, I was just like in a different section than the press was in, I guess. it felt really funny, like clapping for a credit card, but okay. It is neat, you know.
There's a funny moment in the keynote video where they cut to Octavia Spencer and Aaron Paul in the audience for they're announcing the cashback, and you know they're like $1 million celebrities, right? But they're like clapping the 2% cashback, like in like adoration. It's really funny.
Yeah. So what's
the TV celebs before the TV segment?
What the cashback thing is like, so I have a couple credit cards, and one does points and one does cashback, and one of the cashback ones, like you've got to activate every 3 months, and it's like certain categories are eligible. But it isn't just like cash back every day. And the way that the Apple card works is that, you set up your Apple Pay Cash card, which is through Green Dot Bank, I believe is the name of it. And the Apple card, the credit card, there's 1% cash back on physical transactions with the physical card. And the slide that they showed there was like paying in a restaurant where you can do Apple Pay if they work with OpenTable, but that's super rare and only in certain cities. So that's pretty practical to say you need a physical credit card for this.
And in like, you know, the developed world of the UK.
Yeah, well, and where I live.
we can do contactless, you know, restaurants left, right, and center. Mm-hmm. Obviously, though, the Apple card is only launching in the US.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what matters.
And then 2% back on Apple Pay, so contactless transactions, and then 3% back on any Apple service. So, but then the way it works is that there's no, like, a point is worth a dollar amount, or wait until the end of the billing, the transaction period, and then
like, yeah, you don't have to like balance. Redeem a voucher or anything like that.
Yeah, it's like the same. It's like the day of. Yeah, it just goes to your Apple Pay Cash card, which then you can like they didn't really emphasize this, but you can pay in stores with that, which they did emphasize. Or you can literally transfer that to your bank, like which is convenient. Like that is a little bit less friction than what the other cards do. So I really wondered how will this vary from the Barclay card, from other credit cards, and there, you know, there are credit card experts who compare what the best credit card for you is, and this has been kind of pitched as like, or compared as like, it's pretty good. Some of the rewards aren't as good as other ones. Do your research, but it's definitely not the worst credit card that you could have. The interest rate story is different. I think the range there is like 13-22% based on credit worthiness, and that's kind of typical.
They said on the slide lower interest rates, but it's like average interest rate. So
yeah, maybe at the lower 13%, like that's not as typical, but the 23% is definitely typical. And that's also where I'm uncomfortable with this is like, you know, credit cards can be dangerous. Like they can be practical, but you've got to be responsible with them. Like they can also be abused and they can get you in trouble. So it's tricky. Yeah. You know, it's. But I guess the same thing is true for like spending money on expensive Apple products too. So
yeah, I guess if you're buying $1,000 phone, it's like, well, you know, Apple's still making you get into debt in a different way. Because they have the new wallet interface and they show you graphs of what you spent and you get kind of transactions and the big button to pay in, and you can pay weekly or bi-weekly or monthly if you want to. And so all that's very like transparent, and they'll even have this cool little dial interface which shows you your interest repayments, and you can drag it around and it will change the numbers, and you can and it will clearly show you this is how much you need to pay to have 0% interest, because a lot of the cards will instead, you know, they kind of encourage you to only pay the minimum payment, which ultimately means you just rack up interest cost down the road. So the interface and stuff is definitely in the Apple brand of, you know, trying to encourage you to do the right thing. But I do wonder what happens if you get into debt, right? And you get a letter from
the
Apple card.
It will happen. It's bound to
happen. But what I'm really interested, what does that letter look like? And is it headed by an Apple logo or is it headed by Goldman Sachs? Does it say at the top, you know, is it a letter from Apple saying them that you're in debt to us, you're paying 25% interest? Or is that where Goldman Sachs logo suddenly appears out of the ether, and that's how they, you know, they kind of compartmentalize it. Because I'm really interested in what that looks like. Yeah,
the dial for picking your payment amount and how it adjusts for the interest rate and what you're actually paying in interest, and not just a percentage, but like this is the dollar amount of what you're paying for having this credit sit around and linger. It's been compared to kind of the activity rings. It reminds me more of the lesser. Used sleep clock in the clock app, where you adjust your nighttime, your bedtime, and then your sleep hours based on that. But it's a good user interface. American Express has something pretty similar to that on their website. I don't know if it's in their app, but again, it's not like built into the iPhone in this way, and so it's compelling. But people seem really excited for this. And it's coming this summer. It's got a cool user interface. You apply through the wallet app, so there's no like online application. It's in the wallet app. It's same day issue because it is digital. And then you do get a physical card made of titanium, which again is not the first card to do this. That's also kind of common among like high end cards. But it
looks cool though.
It looks nice. Laser etched your name, laser etched on it. There's no card number or security code or signature on the card itself. That's all within the wallet app. If you need it, you know, for like online forms and stuff like that.
And just to kind of like get a general comparison, I looked up the Amazon credit card, right? Because, you know, Amazon, Apple kind of on the same, you know, vein. And the Amazon card advertises like 17-24% interest rate. And you get, and there's fees, because that's the other thing on the Apple card, is there's no late fees or anything, so you don't get an additional penalty. You just have, obviously, the interest accumulates, but you don't get slapped with some more bills, and there's no international fees and stuff. Whereas the Amazon card, it would charge you like an extra $40 if you were a month late and stuff like that. Yeah. And to have the Amazon card, you have to Amazon Prime, which is essentially an annual fee of $99 a year.
Yeah.
And their rewards were 5% if you're buying from Amazon, 2% if you're buying from anywhere else. So if you subtract like the annual cost and the fees, it's kind of the same deal as like the Apple situation, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a bad deal. Obviously, you can do better if you dig into the details. If I was in the US, I'd probably just get one of these cards, set it up as my Apple ID payment method, and then just only use it for that. You get 3% off all the Apple purchases. You get 3% off iCloud storage, and just carry on with your day on everything else. Because
is WWDC an Apple purchase?
I mean, it's directly to Apple, so yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if you're buying that with the Apple, with the direct Apple purchases. It doesn't matter if you're paying, you know, with Apple Pay or not. They just said any direct, anything that goes to Apple.
You can't Apple Pay in the App Store, but it does count for that because it's a service.
Yeah, even though it kind of looks like the same UI, it's different. But yeah. That all counts, and that gives you 3% off. So I think a lot of people would do that. They'll get the cool card, they can put it in the wallet for fun, and just pay off their iCloud account with it, and then carry on using whatever else. Because there's no annual fee, so you don't have to use it. You're not losing anything out.
Yeah, they rely on the iOS 12 based business chat, iMessage business chat for customer support, so you can text Apple or Goldman or whoever's handling customer support and get information, which is it's modern. I mean, you know, you can do that for other services now because like it's not an Apple only thing. It's an open platform. That's clever.
They said they won't sell your data, and Goldman Sachs won't use your data for marketing or advertising.
That's pretty good.
Goldman Sachs has to have your data though, because in case of like fraud or that kind of they can't not have anything, but
yeah, that
at least they're given the pledge.
That slide was pretty specific. I was like, we're not going to use your data for this or this. And I don't know if that was intentional or not, but that's all using MasterCard in the back end for the payment network. So I think it was presented pretty well. It's like, this is our Apple, it was our credit card. We have to have an issuing bank. So we're using Goldman. They've not done consumer cards before, so they're willing to do things that other banks aren't doing because this is new for them. And there have been like stories in the news about like Goldman like laying off people, that they're, what they do otherwise is, you know, you can see that there is a hunger for Goldman too, even if, as profitable as they are, to do something new and just like find like a new revenue, you know.
It kind of feels like the equivalent of Singular for the first iPhone, where you basically, they just gave Apple the reins to do what they want, which is very unusual for the
time.
This
could be very good for Goldman's brand image, though, I think. If people realize that this is a Goldman Sachs-backed card, I think it can
be. The physical card has the Goldman Sachs logo on it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so on the front, you just have the Apple logo and your name.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the back, it has the MasterCard logo and the Goldman Sachs logo.
Yeah.
So, and having any other logo that isn't the Apple logo on an Apple hardware item is very, very rare.
Yeah, and they've got the MasterCard, like two rings, which is pretty subtle. But, and I think it was like, when I think of the payment networks, Visa is like what I think of first. It's like default. But I think I do have some cards in my wallet that are MasterCard. And I think like Discover might be the one that you find some places. It's pretty rare, but may not.
Isn't Discover the cash card, the Apple Pay Cash at the moment? I think so.
These Green Dot, but maybe Green Dot's the bank and Discover is the
Green Dot's the bank, and then the payment network's network. Discover. So because that's a problem with Apple Pay Cash, I believe, is that Discover is less pervasive than the other ones.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting. I don't think there's anything terrible here. It was just weird to be in the audience and everyone's clapping for a credit card. And I always feel weird anyways, like press, like it's my job to like report what's going on here, not to like applaud it unless I'm kind of excited. But I definitely didn't clap for the credit card, even though it was neat and interesting.
I think it's cool and it's probably fine, but it does feel weird that someone in Apple is now making money off people spiraling into debt somewhere along the line. Like, that doesn't feel great.
Well, and hopefully they're doing enough with the guardrails that it doesn't happen. They don't want you to. That isn't their goal, at least, even if it does happen.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. The other thing, let's see. So it's coming this summer. It's going to be US only. You think we'll hear about this much more in the future? And just like, it's like the launch and then it's kind of it.
Yeah. They'll probably have a reminder at June or something to say, now you can go and get it, right? But then it'll probably filter away for a while, and maybe next year around they'll have some updates to it and maybe international launches and stuff. But
I wonder if
it doesn't seem, I don't think it's going to be front page news, consistently.
Yeah.
What more can you do really at the moment?
Yeah. I wonder if the Apple stores will be pressured the employees to push this credit card now, like as a checkout thing. You know, I mean, it's also, it kind of fits in with the thing of like Tim Cook saying, we're going to do things to help sales, you know, with financing options. Like they've got a number of things now with different loan partners. And this is just one more thing they can use. Like, hey, sign up for the Apple Pay card or the Apple card, and you can use that on this purchase and you'll get 3% instant cash back today. Yeah. And you're going to use Apple Pay Cash now if you didn't already. And there was a change to Apple Pay Cash where on the positive side, you now have an option to transfer cash to your bank same day for a fee. I don't forget the 1% fee, which I'm not sure how it compares to Square, but Square does the same thing where you can do an instant transfer for a fee, which is pretty instant, or you have the option to do it with no fee, but it takes longer, like a matter of days, and sometimes it's like next day. So now Apple Pay Cash does that too. And then they ended the ability to send money with Apple Pay Cash or through Apple Pay Cash using a credit card as the funding source. You can now only do it with a debit card or with the Apple card. And the way that they frame it is that there are fees associated with credit cards for cash transfers, like instant cash to go to an ATM and get credit, you know, money out of an ATM using your credit card. There's usually fees involved with that.
Yeah,
and so they want to avoid that with Apple Pay Cash. Now, I don't know, like they could compensate the fee if they wanted to, like that's a thing. But instead, they're saying we now have a credit card. There are no fees for this, and so if you want to send money with a credit card with Apple Pay Cash, use the Apple card. And so I don't know, that felt funny, but it's, I guess it is what it is.
Yeah, I think Venmo does like exactly the same thing. So they probably might have done this anyway, even if they weren't bringing out their own card.
But that's true. They were just I didn't appreciate before that they were more generous than the other services. So now they're kind of on par with the other services. And again, that Apple Cash is only in the US too, right?
Yeah, and this is the start of the announcements that are not tangibly available. Like this is coming this summer. So yeah, you've got a four-month time span.
Apple News Plus today, everything else. This is like the roadmap for this year. This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by our friends at Hyper, a company behind some of our favorite USB-C hubs, chargers, battery packs, and other high-quality accessories for Apple devices. This month, we've teamed up with Hyper for our 9to5 Mac Deal of the Month, where we'll feature a great deal on only quality accessories for Apple devices. For March, get 50% off Hyper's combo wireless charger, USB-C hub, and its other wireless chargers for your car and home. Hyper has three unique Qi wireless chargers. One of the most unique wireless charger options in the lineup is the HyperDrive 7.5-watt wireless charger stand with a built-in USB-C hub featuring 4K HDMI at 30 Hz, gigabit Ethernet, three USB-A 3.0 5 gigabits per second ports, SD micro, and USB-C with 49-watt power delivery. It also has a less expensive option without the built-in USB-C hub, as well as the HyperDrive 7.5-watt wireless charger for the car with an included air vent and compatibility with other interchangeable mounts. Hyper makes some of the most versatile and well-designed accessories for Macs and iPads, iPhones, and more. And we love having Hyper support the podcast. So head to the show notes to get 50% off Hyper's combo wireless charger, USB-C hub, and its other wireless chargers for your car and home. Just use promo code 9to5wireless at checkout. Again, that's promo code 9to5wireless at checkout. Our thanks to Hyper for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour.
And now we move on to the App Store segment, which was basically the game segment. Mm-hmm. They phrase it as games are the most popular category of the App Store, which is 100% true. And obviously everybody kind of knows that the most popular games are the free apps, the with an app purchase, whether that's, you know, Candy Crush, where you buy in-game currency to then resell it, mm-hmm. or you have the games which make you wait, you know, 7 days unless you pay money, and then you can carry on with your day. And they're kind of like semi-scams, right? They're kind of gray area of legitimacy, I'd say. But they're very, very popular.
A lot of,
and then you have
parallels.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have the kind of freemium games which are more like Fortnite, which you can just play the game for as long as you want for free, but then they have like in-game cosmetics and upgrades that you can buy that cost money. And they're kind of the next rung up of being good because they're less, you know, preying on your kind of casino gambling tendency and more just like, here's this great game, and if we get you addicted, you're going to buy upgrades inside. And then obviously beyond that, you have the paid upfront games, which don't have ads and don't, you know, have extra purchases and stuff, but then they're generally more richer experiences, closer to what you get in a console with like narrative and story and, you know, more care put into them in general. Mm-hmm. But those games are a lot lower volume in terms of sales because, and they even say this, Anne Tai came out and she said, it's hard to compete with free. And it's exactly true. And you kind of get this double effect of these apps cost money, so they don't show up as high in the charts compared mm-hmm. to the cheaper games or the free games. And people don't want to buy them anyway because they just play the free stuff. So they kind of phrase Apple Arcade as a way to address kind of discovery and to help these developers monetize, you know, the higher quality premium part game of the store, which I actually think is a really good premise because the whole thing where, you know, the most of the App Store revenue is these freemium games, which then means most of Apple services revenue is the 30% cut of all those in-app purchases from the freemium games.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a sleazy situation for Apple to be in. Like if you actually, you know, put a magnifying glass to it, it feels pretty bad. And they even say as much. Like they basically derided the free-to-play games in the keynote without, you know, not exactly those words, but they definitely like, you know, were like mocking them essentially. But yeah. That's how Apple makes most of its services revenue money at the moment. So it's kind of a weird, awkward situation to be in. This is a way for them to kind of rebalance the App Store revenue so that they can make, you know, services money, but from a product that is more honest and more genuine. So yeah. I actually think it's pretty cool.
So the market on its own, even with Apple having the App Store, like it isn't like just the market on its own, but you know, Apple's got their platform and they do editorial and everything and they approve games and don't approve games. But even with that, on its own, we don't like the status quo. And I think everyone agrees with that. Like it's not, it's okay, but it's kind of scummy. Apple Arcade, which by the way is a great name. Like Apple News mm-hmm. Plus, man, Apple Card, obvious. Apple Arcade, great. And they had the slide where, like, where they unveil it and it's like a Tron arcade style, like light up animation. I think it was really nice touch. But I dig this and credit to Cheddar, for having the scoop on this a few months ago. And they usually have scoops on Snapchat because I think they've got, you know, some friends there. But they had this story a few months ago, and it wasn't widely reported. Like Apple News Plus was obvious from the Texture acquisition a year ago. Apple Card, WSJ had it, but it's a financial story, financial newspaper. But Apple Arcade, you know, great job to those guys at Cheddar. It was a good story. And it panned out pretty much the way they described it. It's a subscription game service. We don't know a lot of details about it, like how much it'll cost and it's coming in the fall. It felt like a slide, like a segment right out of WWDC, but it did fit in with this whole services thing. I'm excited for this, not because I'm a gamer. I'm not, and I don't spend money on games really. Like the last game I loved was Letterpress, and that, you know, got old and then kind of, you know, fell out of favor. And I definitely don't like spend money on like new games. Like, even the games that people love, like is Monument Valley, is that a game?
Yeah, like one of that
the,
is
one
a
of
game.
The, one of the crafty games. Like,
yeah, that's one of the ones they, you know, Apple loves to feature as like an actual paid game, and maybe a Monument Valley 3 would then be part of the arcade.
Yeah, like I have an appreciation for the art of like putting those games together, especially the ones that use like physical sets and they have like digital characters and physical worlds. Like those are really cool, but I just don't have the capacity for like sitting down and playing a game very, very well. I guess time is limited. I don't know, but it's not my pastime. I'll say that. But as a parent, I do love the idea of paying, you know, we assume $10 a month because that's like kind of the going rate for all these different services. I'm going to say $5 to $12 a month. It could vary. We'll see.
I mean, if they're not announcing the price, that definitely means it's not necessarily going to be $10 because otherwise they just don't. I think it's really awkward that they announce a service and not tell you what the price is.
Yeah.
But that kind of shows how far out it is.
Yeah. But even as, like, I do pay for games for my daughter. She's 6 on her iPad and with approval. You know, we do family sharing and she's got to get the approval for it and ask for it, you know, and I don't like. I'm okay with like the game's free to download and you got to unlock the full version. That's okay, but I don't like in-app purchases. But to pay a flat rate monthly for a service and know that she'll be in the gaming for the next like X years and then it'll be over with, I think, and or she can assume the cost when she's older. And that is family sharing friendly. So when my 1 year old is old enough to become kind of a mini gamer, then he too can enjoy it for the same price. I love that. And that there's mm-hmm. no other fees. There's no in-app purchases or, you know, get rid of the ads or tap a banner ad and go to Safari and get some, you know, spam. So as a parent, this really appeals to me. And in the keynote, they even mentioned screen time as a way to like monitor or, you know, control how it's used. So I think it was presented in a great way. And again, not for me, but because it is one rate for the whole family, I'm pretty interested in this as a way to say, this is a new way to use your iPad or in the future when the iPod Touch comes out, your iPod Touch. And I, as a parent, I'll feel a little bit better about knowing, you know, these, what games are on there, that they're high quality, that they're not like, you know, weird or going to have ads or in-app purchases and then send you over to Safari. So
a lot of peace of mind.
Yeah. I'm into it as a parent. I do have some questions.
Yeah, I think this is great.
Yeah. I do have some questions. And I think some of these have been answered since I wrote them down, but like, what's the developer side of things? I think the answer to that is that you can apply for your game to be considered. There's like a form for that.
There is a form. Yep. I'm not sure whether the developer relations are going to be fastidiously letting people into the service,
right,
though.
Yeah.
I think this is more, you know, it's when Apple's seeking out the publishers.
Yeah. And I don't know the game companies. Like, I'm not well versed in that. But then there were some big names out on that chart. Like, it wasn't. You didn't have like EA, but you did have, I think one of them is called ArcSoft or something like that. Then they made like a racing game that I have enjoyed. There was like Cartoon Network and Lego. Like these are not, you know, they have their other businesses, but like, I guess the game side of it isn't their whole bread and butter. But
yeah, like if you kind of slice the App Store, take the chunk off that is the companies that monetize on free to play stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you take that away, they basically have the top publishers of the rest of the market.
Yeah.
So. And the big catch here is that these games are on mobile exclusive to Apple Arcade, so you can't buy them in the App Store, and you won't be available on Android. They may have console versions because these games will be available on iOS, Mac, Apple TV, but they are allowed to release on like Nintendo Switch or Xbox and stuff. But they're not allowed if you're in Apple Arcade. Your game is not allowed to be on Android, and it's not allowed to be available to buy separately in the App Store either.
I imagine that if you would struggle if you are interested in Apple Arcade as a way to back your app, you know, your game successfully, then you're probably not having much luck on Android anyway. Like, you know, and also that, you know, I think it'd be fine if it was also like a standalone in the App Store. But that if you're interested in Arcade, then you're probably not having much luck there either. Or you are, but you think you'll have better luck in Arcade. So it's neat. The part where Apple
says and it seems like Apple is funding these games in many respects.
The next point was one of my questions that I want to mention is what does backing development mean? Does that mean that they're paying? Are they supplying hardware and resources? Are they just like on the other end of the phone call, you know, when needed? Like, that's kind of opaque, but they're definitely involved some way.
Like, yeah, and at least in some of the cases, they're like the publisher. So I assume that if you're in the Arcade and not a publisher, you'll get a higher rate. Apple hasn't funded it up front, that you'll get a higher rate of, you know, the revenue. Whereas if Apple has funded it up front, you probably get a lower rate because, you know, part of your payment is like the advance. Like when you write a book, Apple's paying for the book to be made.
Sure,
paying for the game to be made.
Yeah. So
obviously that we assume that the Cheddar rumor was that this is based off usage. So it's similar to the News Plus service where, you know, Apple takes a cut off the top and then the rest of it is divvied up based on game usage, which if it was a free-for-all could be abused, because you could have the games which are like, oh, we're going to maximize how much money we're going to make, so here's 10 seconds of you doing nothing just so we get an extra 10 seconds in our, you know, in our counter. But because it's so curated, they're not going to let that fly essentially, because Apple chooses what's in.
Tapbytes, the tweetbot maker, Paul Haddad, have like a joke tweet that was like joking about like 10 second long loading screens, like just for the sake of extending your gameplay. But if it's curated, then you're not gonna, it won't be allowed.
And it sounds like a joke, but that philosophy is what most of the freemium stuff is, right? It's,
yes.
Oh, you can do this, but no, you've got to wait 5 days unless you pay us, you know, 99 cents
today,
and then you pay
again
tomorrow.
Yeah, with the commission. Yeah. And by the way, this comes, I think it was a really compelling announcement. Like they say, you know, cross-platform, not all titles, I think, but like it will be the goal, and the save states will be between devices. And this is addresses the whole, you know, the Apple TV could be great for games, but there's just not a market for it. Well, this helps that, especially if Apple's involved in like funding. And then offline playback, so you don't have to worry about, like, even like Nintendo has, are you online so that it's not pirated, I think, is like the whole thing there. And then this like contrasts with what Google's announcement last week or so of, what is it called?
Stadia.
It's kind of like Stadium, which makes some sense, but Stadia, it sounds like a medicine. which is Google Stadia?
Yeah, so Stadia is a streaming gaming service where the game runs on Google servers and it essentially sends a video stream of the game to your device.
Okay.
And then your inputs on the device get shuttled back over the network to the servers, which then replay and carry on. Mm. So it's like Netflix, but for gaming. So literally like streaming for gaming, not just a subscription service where it downloads and it goes away.
Yeah, so high bandwidth requirements, which is not like impossible these days, but it could be tricky.
Yeah, and latency might play into it. But obviously on the upside is that they'll be able to have really, really beefy graphics cards on their servers, which your iPhone wouldn't be able to compete with. So if you have got the solid connection, you'll be able to get better graphics. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the trade-off there. And the Stadia service, although they don't have any publishers or games signed up really, they seem to be targeting the games that we, you know, like the AAA titles that you'd reel off the top of your head, like Call of Duty, like those, that level of games. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Apple Arcade service, at least in this initial launch, because they're like mobile exclusive, they don't have any of those kind of, you know, first-person shootery, real-time strategy. You know, like the hardcore gaming market, that isn't really their thing. They're more targeting towards the niche, you know, more fun, puzzly, that type of arena.
Yeah, yeah.
But they do have big publishers on board, but they're not giving them the, you know, like the hardcore AAA franchises necessarily.
Right. Yeah. I think they'll be a racing game. That's all I care about for myself. That's all I play.
It's not clear to me, because they say it's going to launch with 100 titles and they're going to add more over time. Are they going to remove some over time?
My read on it was that the 100 is the goal and that some might not all be there at launch, and that's what they want to land at eventually.
I'm pretty sure they said launch with 100.
There's some fine print that might say that.
Yeah, there are definitely weasel words in that thing. But
I mean, in the whole fact that they don't have a price yet or like a specific launch date besides this fall, right? Then it's a work in progress, but it is compelling service.
Will I ask about the removal thing specifically? Because Microsoft Game Pass is kind of the same deal, but for Xbox, where for $9.99 a month, they have like a catalog of games that you can play free, but at the end, if you stop paying, obviously you don't get access to it anymore. And then that library changes in and out because it's normally like the 2 years ago games, not the brand new ones. And then it kind of rolls in on a schedule. Presumably, the arcade is only going to grow because if the games are exclusive to arcade, they can't go away, if that makes sense, because there's nowhere else to do it. And they're not going to just throw them away after a year. So I think it's going to be like they're partnering people now to launch with around 100. Obviously, some might get delayed and stuff, but that seems to be their aim. And then over time, that catalog's just going to grow and grow and grow and grow.
Yeah. And by the way, there are parallels here to what, I guess, past sponsor and maybe future sponsor SetApp does, where they have one subscription monthly fee for apps on the Mac, and then they have their own SetApp application where you go and download the apps, and they divvy out payments based on usage, I think. And Apple hasn't done that for just like productivity apps and like general Mac apps yet, but I mean, this is kind of that, but for games, you know, in the same way that they pick and choose like who's in and who's out and that kind of thing. So I think it's a cool service. Biggest compliment is the name. It's the perfect name, and it contrasts so well with Stadia. It's like, which even the Google friendly folks were scratching their head over.
Yeah, and I'd say I've got like a 5 times more likely chance to subscribe to this than to the new service.
Because you yourself do play games, right? And I think a lot of
And I predominantly play a game called League of Legends on the PC, which is freemium. It's, you know, it's kind of like the Fortnite model of free, but skins and stuff you pay for extra. And then on mobile, I basically only play Crossy Road, which is a free game and again has like skins and upgrades, but it's not. It's I hate the freemium games where, you know, it's like the coin model of you have to wait or pay. Like, I'm not interested in that at all.
I still play Pokemon Go, and largely because they had the health sync feature added, which uses Apple Health Kit, where if you go on a run with just your Apple Watch, we're just like the steps you take throughout the day to just like get around in your life. That data syncs back to Pokemon Go, and then you get credit in the game for eggs hatched and candy earned with your buddy Pokemon. And so you literally like you get achievements in the game without having your phone on you, which I like that because I don't like having to be tied to the phone app, and the watch app is terrible. But when they added the health thing feature, like that was excellent. And that got me kind of back into it in a big way because I can literally like, I don't feel like going for a run, but I kind of want to hatch that egg or like evolve that Pokemon. So I'm going to go for a run. And then in a few hours, like I'll open up the app and then there's credit, you know, from real world activity. So I like that. In terms of the game stuff, like again, I think my kids will love it and will benefit from it. And as a parent, I'll have peace of mind about like what's included in it and how it's operated and funded. And
yeah, then, maybe you dabble in it once or twice.
Yeah. And I can already say like, if there's a racing game, I will probably play it. And then there was the one Frogger game where it was like Frogger in like a crazy environment. It wasn't like crossing the street. It was like in like a desk or something. I forget the name of it, but that's a game where it's like nostalgia for like when I was, you know, a kid and enjoyed Frogger. So, and because it's like, you know, you don't pay per person. It's one family, one fee. I will get to benefit from it without even calling it my own. So I'm a fan of this. We'll see how it goes.
And I bet when this launches, there will be an Apple Store bundle where you can buy like an MFI game controller and it comes with, you know, 3 months, 6 months of arcade. Like, because right now they used to have a bundle which was you get the MFI controller with an Apple TV and a copy of Minecraft.
Yeah.
They took that away, but a lot of these games are going to be, you know, controller dependent, right?
Well, it's kind of like Beats headphones with Apple Music, you know.
Yeah, I think, and I bet that's one of the ways they're going to sell it is you can, you know, buy a controller from us for $99 and we'll include first year free, for instance. I bet that's something they do.
That'd be clever. This week, 95 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Hair Club because your confidence is important. And sometimes one change can make all the difference. Hair Club knows this, and they're inviting you to become part of the Hair Club family to see how getting the most out of your hair can change your life. Hair Club is the leader in total hair solutions. With a legacy of success for over 40 years, they're not new at this either. They understand the emotions you're feeling and know the questions you have. Whether you're looking to revitalize the growth of your own hair or to learn more about the latest proven methods for hair replacement or restoration, Hair Club's professionally trained stylists, hair health experts, and consultants will craft a personalized solution to ensure you feel your best and get the most out of your hair. Hair health can have such an impact on our self-esteem and self-image, but we can't always control how healthy our hair is, and we don't all have Craig Federighi's amazing head of hair. But it doesn't have to be that way. Go to hairclub.com/happyhour today for a free hair analysis and a free take-home hair care kit, all valued over $300. That's hairclub.com/happyhour for a free hair analysis and free hair care kit. hairclub.com/happyhour. Experience your hair and your life at its best, only with Hair Club. I'm certain you'll love the club. Our thanks to Hair Club for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour.
And that was games. And then the thing that has obviously been teased the most with the It's Showtime slogan for the event and all the stuff that we've been hearing in the run-up has clearly been laser-focused on television. Mm-hmm. And the TV segment of this event was pretty big because it spanned not just their original content effort, but it also spanned what they're doing to upgrade the TV app and how they're going to get subscriptions through there. So again, a lot of this was dictated by rumor and details like, you know, exact pricing and availability were not disclosed. So a lot of it was just confirming rumors and reports. But we had a new face on the stage, at least, which is Peter Stern, and he's the VP of services, and he came in earlier in 2017, so he's pretty new to the company, but he kind of runs everything from iCloud to TV and music and stuff.
Which,
and
so he's under Eddie, right? So Eddie is the senior vice president of internet services, lots of other things. But then this is under Eddie. I think
he's VP,
to Eddie, but he's the vice president of services, which, you know, in this current moment is a pretty big deal at Apple.
Indeed.
You know.
Yeah, and it was interesting that Eddie himself, Eddie Key, was not actually on stage.
I think that was a positive. Not that Eddie's bad. I think he's comical, but that, yes, he is the head of all the stuff, but that he's got lots of deputies, men and women, who run their own divisions and report to him. But that, you know, like isn't Apple Pay under Eddie Key? And so,
yeah, Excel services, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and Eddie is a good presenter, but this Peter Stern person was very good. Like, he is slick. He's obviously come out of the business world. He knew what he was doing and he was engaging. So it was, you know, almost good that Q didn't come up and dance.
Right.
So Stern first introduces an quote unquote all new TV app, which is not necessarily all new, but it is, you know, relatively well redesigned. So you have newer navigation at the top. They've kind of gone from the slidey down tab bar to this more like integrated thing. And they've added like a kids tab. And when you dive into a show now, you can kind of channel surf. They kind of did an analogy where if you swipe left or right on the remote, it kind of flicks through many different shows at once. So you don't have to keep going through navigation hierarchy to just find something to watch. And when you kind of rest on a detail of a show, the trailer and the preview starts playing in the background. So you kind of get a sense of what's going on and you can swipe up and it goes full screen. You can add to up next. And it's kind of like a refined version of the TV app, which it feels like they've paid like a lot of attention to each of the sections. But at the core of it, it's still, you know, the one app where you go to and get everything. And they made a big deal out of like iTunes movies and TV shows being in the TV app now. But that's not new. That's been there before. I think where they're going with that is that eventually, maybe later this year, the iTunes store is going to be deprecated and we'll have, you know, the number one place where you go for that stuff is through the store that's inside the TV app. Similarly for music, they're going to go all in on the Apple Music app.
That would be nice.
But obviously the fact that the existence of iTunes movies and TV shows is not new. Like,
right. Yep.
That was kind of like recap.
Yeah.
Similarly, they went over the different options you have for like cable providers, integrations. Again, they didn't announce any new today. But that's all staying around, stuff like how you can get Amazon Prime in the TV app and stuff. But that continues to operate in the old way of it shows the content, but when you click on it, it changes out to the Amazon Prime app, et cetera, et cetera. What they have integrated now is the Apple TV channels, which are where you can subscribe to networks like HBO or Showtime directly inside the TV app. And those shows are hosted on Apple servers. And they're streamed by Apple, and you don't leave the TV experience. So it's as if you were buying the show, you know, from iTunes. You don't have to be jumped around and bounced around.
You don't even need like the Showtime app, for example, which is nice.
Yeah.
And I think Apple can set the prices for the service too. Like, so they're hosted.
They didn't announce the pricing for these things, but when the there was a demo by Cindy Lin, and she bought the Showtime subscription, but she did it very quickly. So the purchase screen came up and went away. If you freeze on the frame, Showtime is listed there as $10.99, which is $11, which is how much you buy it for on Amazon. Because Amazon basically does the same thing with, you know, Amazon video channels.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're actually how much price flexibility there is going to be. But in the run-up to the event, there was a rumor by the Wall Street Journal that, you know, HBO, Showtime, and Stars were going to be $9.99 each. But on the slide, it definitely had $10.99 for a second. Even though they never addressed the price directly, that's what showed up in the demo at least. So maybe they have wiggle room, but they're going to start it at, you know, the normal price is like $50 for HBO. And then perhaps they bundle it up somehow later on and do discounts there. But it's, again, the pricing stuff they didn't elaborate on.
Yeah. A couple things I got here in my notes. So the first thing is that I see a lot of people say, like, why is Apple doing this? Like, what, especially their digital content, like, what can they contribute that they always say they want to do things to improve lives and like, you know, they've got a reason for everything that they do. Not just that they're a capitalistic company in business, but that they want to make a difference in the world. So what difference can they make through television? And the way that Tim Cook began the presentation even before Peter Stern joined the stage was, he said, quote, "We love TV." And then eventually he goes on to say, like, it enriches lives, that through storytelling and you know, connection that they do see a value to humanity through video content. You know, and then there is the Apple TV channels feature. And we didn't know at the time of the event, but a couple of days later, there's a software beta for iOS, there's a software beta for Apple TV, and even on the old Apple TV third generation, the 1080p box before it got tvOS and the Siri remote, not the 720p box from 2012, the 2013 box that Apple sold for like $100 or so. That one gets this new TV app experience, which is crazy. You can now try the beta on Apple TV for HD, which is the new name for the 1080p box with tvOS, and then Apple TV 4K and on iOS, so iPhone and iPad, and then coming this fall to the Mac, and then also coming to Roku, Fire TV boxes, and then Samsung, which we knew, which is probably like, it's not going to be iTunes movies and TV shows. It'll be this TV app,
yep.
Apple TV logo icon. And then also they didn't say this at the beginning of the year, but now we know that Samsung, not just Samsung, but Sony, Vizio, and LG will also pick up these apps. So those are the HomeKit TVs.
In addition to the AirPlay integration that had already been announced.
Yeah. So you can already try the Apple TV channels feature in the beta and actually do the free trial. Like you pay for it after the trial is over with, which is just 1 week. But like, for example, there are 4 channels right now that you can do. There'll be a lot more at launch or shortly after launch. But like right now there's Showtime, there's Stars, there's Smithsonian channel, and there's Taste Made. So no HBO in time for the beta yet, but there's at least 4 that you can try. And like, it's the way they pitched it on stage. Like, this was the Peter Sharon guy. It was like, people want to pay for just the channels that they want. And it quickly becomes pretty pricey to do that. Like, if every channel is $10 a piece and that you don't even have like the ESPN Disney channels involved, it's kind of a big pitch. You're not quite delivering what you're swinging there. So I don't know, but it's a platform. It's a start, and I do think that like, I wondered if there'd be value in this versus the old model of just go to the app store, download the app for the channel, and then pay that way. Even if it's through the app store, I think there is some friction removed by doing it through the TV app.
You know, it's definitely better all being in one place. No question. Because also you also get integrated downloading. They said it can be online or offline.
Yeah, family sharing compatible.
Yeah, family sharing compatible. It streams your Apple servers, which means you don't have to worry about, you know, big events crushing the servers, presumably, because they have the resources.
Yeah.
And, you know, the TV app is nice compared to, you know, cable apps and network apps.
It's nice and it's getting better, you know.
Yeah.
I think that the TV app that they showed was bigger news for the Apple TV than like tvOS 11 plus 12 combined. Like the TV app is quickly becoming the platform, and it's on other platforms too. But it looks pretty good, you know.
Yeah, and like on Apple TV, tvOS, it's kind of more finessed with, you get some better animations and transitions. Mm-hmm. And like the channel surfing stuff is probably not going to be on, you know, every client, like the Roku client.
Yeah, it's like the canonical version of the TV app, and everywhere else is like a version of it. But it's like,
yeah,
the
almost like how everyone complains when Amazon or YouTube do, you know, they're kind of like translated apps for the tvOS platform. I think Apple's going to do exactly the same thing in reverse, where you get the nice experience, obviously, on iOS and tvOS and macOS, because that's one thing they announced, is that Apple TV is coming to the Mac in the fall.
Which, by the way, how obvious is it to just deploy the TV app everywhere, like versus selling a cheap stick for streaming or like relying on the Apple TV, you know, like they're going all out to get the new TV app in front of more people. And it's for the channels feature, but it's also for Apple TV Plus, the streaming service coming in the fall. So that means like, if you've got the 1080p Apple TV 3 third generation, like you'll get that. It'll be a free software update, and then you can pay monthly and access it through there. You know, or if you've got the smart TVs, which I don't know, like the HomeKit and AirPlay 2 stuff is going to be limited to like the new models. Or I think Vizio is the most generous there. But surely the TV app will just be like, if they have a, you know, like there's the LG app marketplace, whatever it's called, I don't know. But like, surely if you've got the LG app store equivalent on your TV, then you can just go and get the app. It doesn't matter if your TV works with HomeKit or not, I would imagine.
Yeah, they didn't say any restrictions like that.
Yeah.
And so, I have a kind of conspiracy theory here on the whole, the old Apple TV OS getting this thing. What if they do, because they didn't announce any hardware changes today, right? And everything stays at the same price. So the Apple TV experience is $149 and up. And it seems like now they're going to position that box as being, you know, TV and games.
Yeah.
You know, put arcade on that and push that, which is fine. but they probably need something on the cheapest perspective. Even with, like, I think it's really stupid if Apple goes, oh, you want a cheaper streaming device? Go and buy a Roku. Like, yes, it's good to be on the Roku 100% and it gets in front of eyeballs, but I feel like Apple should have something of their own.
Sure. And
I think they could do a really, really cheap stick that runs the 2011 operating system and just runs the TV
app. Oh, a stick. I was thinking they just literally bring back the box, like the Apple TV 3. They just start selling it again. Like, why not?
Oh, that would suck. But,
well, why not? I think it, like, it's,
yeah,
it's,
but you're comparing, against like the Roku $30 sticks, which are just USB sticks. Like, it, I think there's an elegance to it just plugging inside and nothing else.
That's true. It's just more effort, though. Yeah. Just reviving something dead. But I think,
yeah, but, I mean, they've gone to the effort of making it work on that version. So,
yeah, I think it might be okay if they just, like, what was the last price they sold it for?
$69.
Yeah. So, maybe they sell it for $49. And, like, you know, what's the price of Apple TV HD? The Apple
$149.
So $150, and then it's $180 for 4K, and then $200 for 4K with more storage.
$64.
Yeah. It's expensive. So maybe the same $70 price would be okay. I don't know, but
they need a stick, right? Like, it's so much easier to buy a $20 stick and you just stick it in the side of your TV and you're done. And because it's lower power, you can on newer TVs.
They're not going to sell Fire TVs and Rokus in the Apple Store. And they need no way for that. So
okay. Yeah, and this it would be because the 2010, it was September 2010, it was unveiled. It was like one of the last things Jobs did. That was the A5 chip Apple TV. So that is really low power now. And
that was the 720p one, wasn't it? And then the next one was 1080p, so it was like one chip newer.
Probably. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. So 2012.
I remember, yeah, the 2010 was like when I was really getting into Apple, and I bought that from Best Buy, and I wasn't quite sure what the Apple TV was for yet, like, and there weren't as many channels on at the time, but I could literally put it in my pocket and, like, go somewhere. I just thought that was so neat, but.
No, you're correct. The 720p one was 2010, and then the 1080p one was the spring of 2012. Yeah. So that one, which I believe ran an A6 chip, could easily be the tiniest USB stick in the world nowadays.
They could sell
it really cheap, just sell it at cost, and just use it to push Apple TV Plus in the fall. I think that makes perfect sense. All it does is run the TV app and nothing else.
Yeah. Only thing I'll also say is that in the new Apple TV app, so you've got a new icon. They changed the like generic TV icon with like a blue and green gradient with a black background to now Apple logo TV lowercase, like the logo for Apple TV set-top boxes, but it's black background, blue and green gradient. I think it's pretty.
It's better than what I had before.
Yeah, that's on the Apple TV. That's on iOS. I'll imagine that'll be on all the other platforms too. And then they've changed the Siri remote icon, or whatever they call it on iOS, to be
Apple TV remote.
To be the Siri remote, like in Control Center. So that matches now. That's fine, whatever. Because before it was Apple, it was gray Apple TV, black background. So it just looked like the new Apple TV icon. So that's changed. The new kids section I like a lot because it pulls content from all the TV channel or all the TV app partners, not just the channels, but the partners that you get kicked to their app, like Amazon Prime, or Prime Video. But I think it's nice. Like Netflix has done this very, very well in their app, and they're not playing ball with any of this stuff, but like their app has a very great kids section based on characters and shows. Now the TV app does that too, which is a fine thing to copy. You just go in there, you pick out characters that you know or TV shows. It works with Up Next. There's no profiles, which is too bad, but maybe in the future. But I thought that was very nice. Like the old TV app did not have a kids section. The new one does. It's prominent. You just go there, you pick like the character or the show, and you start playing video. Even if you get jumped out to the Prime Video app, you never have to go to the Prime Video app directly, like to start out and navigate, which is a big benefit. So I'm a fan of that. Again, as a parent, I like that.
Yeah, obviously this needs some sort of user profile feature in future. So, because your little kid cannot accidentally swipe the remote and then go onto the hard-hitting stuff. Like, you want to be able to offer, say, you know, you have this profile and it only has kids content in it. But that is kind of the thing that you'd expect in operating system.
And I saw people complain that, like, the kids section, even though it's its own section, it still integrates with Up Next. So that if you're watching Daniel Tiger for your child, it's still going to be part of your queue of like shows that the TV app surfaces and recommends for you. So big opportunity for profiles, that's for sure.
But yeah, multi-user operating systems across iOS and tvOS definitely on the list of stuff that they're going to get to.
But again, it feels like the TV app that they showed off was like, you know, it was bigger than like tvOS 11 and 12 combined.
I agree.
Yeah, and maybe this other thing that I've got in my head is part of like the Apple TV Plus streaming service. But they also highlighted, I think that's true, but they highlighted in that section at least a focus on the best video and sound quality. They didn't specify, like, they didn't say 4K and Dolby Atmos.
No way that Apple TV Plus is not going to be 4K HDR. Yeah,
but
no
surely
way.
Everything is 4K. Like, it's not crazy, like, Netflix has 4K too. But, like, surely it's all Dolby Atmos too. Like, it's the best that the Apple TV 4K can handle, you know. So, I think that's nice to expect.
Yeah. Let's talk about the TV Plus thing. So, it was interesting how they kind of transitioned into it because they finished their... you know, we play nicely with everyone else section, and into now it's time for you to pay us directly section with Apple TV Plus. They brought out Zach Ramberg and
that's
Jamie
the name
Erlich.
Of their streaming video service. You pay Apple monthly. We don't know how much yet. It'll be this fall, but you pay Apple directly monthly for access to all of the original content that they've been producing. Right, like they've been making.
Yeah, they described it as exclusive TV shows and movies. Mm-hmm. At least in what they announced today or this week, they did not commit to providing any back catalog content, like a library of stuff they bought from others.
Yeah, and because it's in the TV app, then you're relying on partners, which is interesting. Like Netflix is that their whole thing used to be DVDs of, you know, existing stuff, and then they did streaming, and then they did original content to kind of like differentiate and become like HBO. But every service has a mix of like their own stuff. Well, I guess HBO is like just their own stuff, but they do some licensing. But like Netflix is like their own stuff plus a massive catalog, and they're slowly becoming more of their own stuff where you can just subscribe just for what they offer. But people also like to watch The Office and Friends on Netflix, and Apple's got none of that as part of their service. They're relying on you to plug in your existing services, which in some ways it's smart because like they're not asking you to stop paying for Netflix, even if it doesn't work on the TV app. It still works on your devices. They're just saying, also pay us for this stuff too.
It's going to be interesting, and annoyingly, obviously, they don't tell you the price, but how they frame it, especially initially when they do not have their full, you know, when they do not have 100 original content shows, when they've only got 5, right, in September.
Sure.
Are they going to still be able to charge the same high rates and get traction? They
kind of pitched 5 shows, but maybe that's kind of the number of what's been finished in the New York Times report a few weeks ago. But maybe they've got more ready by the time.
They definitely will. Because on after they went through, which we'll get to in a sec, the parade of celebs that they got on stage, they had this like master slide of like 100 names. Yeah. And loads of the shows that are associated with those names on that slide were not ones they've demonstrated today.
Yeah, and so they also had a line that I thought was pretty informative, which is that they'll have new content added every month. And so that's been a concern that we've discussed on this show before frequently is, are they going to launch with a catalog, add some more stuff, and then kind of be done for a while while Netflix adds new stuff every week? Like, or is it going to be like every year they add, like, here's the next round of Apple TV content? But the way they said on stage is every month there'll be new stuff. And maybe that means that just like every month they'll just happen to continue finishing projects, or maybe it'll be planned that like, I think it'd be best if they just have every month there's something new on this, you know, there's something new debuting. And
definitely how you get continuous like, marketing, right? Sure, you have a brand high profile show launching every single month.
Like this can't just be a one time thing where we're going to make, you know, even let's say 50 shows with 10 episodes each, and like for the next 10 years, we've got 500 shows you can watch.
This has to be like it has to be on a train track which is leading up to the Netflix library where they have, you know, like 1500 original shows at once.
Yeah,
like,
and the presentation, so there was no AQ, but there was the Sony picture hire. That came from Sony, Sony Pictures, right?
Yeah.
So that
Amberg
was
Amberg and Ehrlich.
2016 or 2017? It was in the summer.
17 they joined.
So that was a press release from Apple. They said that we've poached these employees from Sony Pictures. They're going to come work under Eddie Q, and they're going to work on video content. And then we had 2 years of news stories from the Hollywood press saying Apple's backing this. They're bidding on this. They lost this to Netflix, but they picked this up, you know. They want to have the Obamas. Oh, the Netflix got the Obamas. Like, there's been all these stories. And we finally see what have they been doing. And this is the first time that we've seen Zach Van Amberg and Jamie Ehrlich on stage doing a presentation. And I think they killed it. Like, yeah. You know,
especially Amberg, he reminds me of like Johnny Ive, but talking about TV shows, not design of products. Yeah.
And I had not known like who is who, but Zach is the tall one and Jamie is the not as tall one. And they didn't bring diversity. I mean, they did two white guys. And that's also a theme in like, from what I can see of the presentation, like Hollywood, like directors, especially a lot of white guys. There are some women, there are some people of color represented, but it's not, it's pretty poor in terms of like, you know, representation of like society. But for being two white guys, I think they did a fine presentation. Like the Zach guy, I think presented more than Jamie did. But I mean, this is their expertise, and like, Apple hired experts here. I think that these are not, you know, there was a big deal when they were hired. And I think that they didn't feel foreign either. They didn't feel like we're a separate entity from Apple. They felt like they believe in Apple, that they're in this for Apple, they're Apple employees, but they're also experts at what they're doing. So
yeah, if they hadn't publicized that they'd been hired and stuff and we didn't know that and they just came out, you'd think they'd worked at Apple for 10 years.
Sure,
right?
They
feel in the zone. So that's a good sign. Yeah. And they kind of introduce their big showcase as the service dedicated to the best stories ever told. And they have this video, this quite long video that's all in black and white. It's like 5 minutes. And it's narrated by like Spielberg and Octavia Spencer and J.J. Abrams. And they roll out like, and it's just a video about storytelling. It's like, this is how you make a movie. First draft, second draft, third draft, tick, 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 like really high octane. Like,
so on that topic of the video and what it was and their pitch of the best storytelling, like, TV shows are not new. Movies are not new. These would have existed elsewhere, probably, in most cases.
Yeah.
Just not in this package. And so part of the value here is that Apple's bringing really good stuff together in one place, and they're probably not going to have many duds in this package. So that's what's different here. But also, Apple's really good at marketing. And so they can be late to streaming. They can do what Amazon's kind of doing and Netflix is kind of doing, and it's not totally original. It's new for them, but like, they're so good at marketing that they can break down what is a TV show? What is a movie? And like, why does it matter to us? Why does it appeal to us? And they're really good at like making it very basic and fundamental and relatable. And I thought they did that. Like, they didn't have TV trailers to show us really. They had like one montage trailer. But I feel like they pitched the idea of, you know, you should watch TV.
In the way like only Apple can, they really make it feel like it really matters.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's palpable. Yes. And after the video ended, they did something that they basically never done before, which is they didn't have someone come back out and start introducing guests. They just did this kind of like cut to black, and then the lights would come up and there'd be a celebrity.
Yep.
There'd be a celebrity star. Steven Spielberg. Mm-hmm. And he introduces the Amazing Stories anthology, which obviously been rumored, but
which was the first story to be greenlighted, that from the reports like a couple years ago.
Yeah, definitely we heard about it, like it was one of the first, if not the first. And he kind of gives a summary about his inspiration and what he's going to do to make this TV show. They're not really telling you the plot, they're just giving you like the elevator pitch essentially, which is good. I was on board, right?
Yep.
And interestingly, on the backdrop they have like a stag image, and they also project the image onto the walls of the theater, so it's not just on the screen, so you kind of get this kind of cinematic feel.
Yeah, that was really cool.
And obviously you were there live. So.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could see it on the stream, and I asked and you said, yeah, but it was really cool in person, and I think you could see it longer in person than they focused on the stream. And I took video of it and like posted it on Instagram as well, on 95 Mac and my own, but so you can see it. But it was for each show that they presented, they would do that kind of like immersive, and it wasn't like high quality because it wasn't like the whole room was a screen, like a big curved screen, but it was theatric, at least, you know.
It was an atmosphere, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of those TVs that shine the ambient colors on the background of the wallpaper. It kind of was that effect, but it worked well. And Spielberg, I was like, yeah, this is really concise. It was a nice summary of the show. Great. Then they had Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Aniston introduced the morning show drama thing, which is kind of like half comedy, half serious, but they definitely pushed the whole power struggle of men and women angle to it. So they definitely have that there. That one dragged on a bit, and especially because they had like a a bit where Steve Carell kind of popped in from the side. And
so I'm a big Steve Carell fan. And so
I love Steve Carell. I love The Office.
Yeah, yeah. The presentation, being there in person, like that was kind of the, Steve Carell and then Oprah was like the highlight of me being in attendance for me.
Yeah.
And just in general, like I felt like the pacing of the whole event was really well done, and it was diverse, even though it was like services. It was like, this one feels like WWDC. This one feels like something totally different. You know, I thought it felt pretty good. And the whole second hour of the event where the stars were heavily involved, like, you know, maybe you don't go and like rewatch it over and over, but just like for a one-time viewing, I think it was very well done. And I think that like, if they continue to need to do this, like Hulu style presentations for shows that are coming up to promote the service, that it can be its own event in the future, not part of like an Apple event. But for a one-time thing, I think this was appropriate and it was fitting.
Yeah. And some of them spoke for a little too long. Like, Spielberg was really concise and to the point. And even, like, the Witherspoon and Aniston back and forth kind of went on a bit. But overall, it was, like, a pretty... They did as well as they could have done of what they needed to show, right?
Yeah.
Given the fact that they don't have finished episodes and they don't clearly have full trailers that they want to show, what they did there was engaging enough. And, you know, out of all the celebrity appearances Apple has, this was a pretty good one.
Yeah. A couple of things for me on this, I didn't immediately recognize Steven Spielberg. Like, I know him from the 90s of like Big Hair and everything, but like modern Steven Spielberg, I didn't recognize like at a glance. But it was quickly obvious who it was once he was there. I knew Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. I was excited to see Steve Carell come out on stage. There were more people afterwards who I relied totally on the fact that we've been covering them for months now, that I could like do a Google search on 9to5 Mac of like, what are the stories, what are the shows, and put it together. But the comedian, for the show, Little America.
Little America. Yeah. Yeah. Kumail. I don't know his surname. It's something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I only know him from Silicon Valley. Person from Silicon Valley.
I've seen 80% of the first season, but it's like too close to work for me to really enjoy. But,
Yeah, I don't love Silicon Valley, but that's where I know him from.
Yeah, and it's a popular show. But in attendance, like I was also trying to cover the event too, so I wasn't like totally just like immersed in like experiencing it. But like rewatching it on the plane, his segment felt long, but I laughed out loud on the plane. Like, it was funny, you know.
He definitely has stage presence and stage experience that some of the actors didn't. Like, it was some of the actors, you could literally just see them reading the teleprompter, whereas he was like, you know, he was almost doing like stand-up comedy,
like a stand-up
which I assume
bit, right?
He does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm really interested to watch Little America. It sounded really cool. The morning show is going to be right down my alley. Like, I know I'm going to like that. The C sci-fi thing where he did that bit where it's like, close your eyes and what's it like to be blind, and that was a bit cringy. But
so that's Jason Momoa. He's Aquaman. Yeah,
yeah.
And then he's also in Game of Thrones, which everyone knows what Game of Thrones is. I've never seen an episode. I'm not sure that it's my show, but you know.
Yeah, I've watched Game of Thrones, but I'm not like a hardcore diehard fan. It's good, but
okay. Yeah, it kind of feels like that's they're like Game of Thrones. I mean, they've got a Game of Thrones actor,
the world building, exactly. Yeah. And I love sci-fi stuff, so I hope C is good. I feel like there's a chance that it can be bad, though. And like,
well, the premise was interesting. Like, I didn't pick it up in the event because I was multitasking, but when rewatching the keynote, the way they described it was, imagine a world where years ago there was a virus where everyone, you know, most of the population was wiped out, but the only people who survived were blind. And it's been so many years that now it's almost a myth that people could ever see, that there's anything to see, so there's no visuals, and this whole world is like, you know, no one can see, and it's not even like we're blind, it's just how it is. But it's not like present day, it's like some other world, like you said, world building. And then there's some twist to all that, I guess, like maybe someone can see or something, I don't know. But
because it's going to be difficult to translate that into a television show, just when none of the actors are able to see, like, so that's where I'm a bit worried that it's going to fall flat. But at least in the, you know, the 2-second concept, it sounds good.
Yeah, it's an interesting pitch. And I think, is it based on a story? Maybe, I don't know, but yeah, I think everything they showed like made me want to watch TV. You know, these
what did you think about the Big Bird section?
Okay, this is again where I fall back as a parent. If it was just me, I'd say meh. But it's a little confusing, but because we've covered the stories on N5 Mac, I think I've got more background than like observers might otherwise. But so what they're doing, they're not licensing Sesame Street episodes. They're working with Sesame Street Workshop, the company, which makes Sesame Street, but they're not making Sesame Street for Apple TV Plus. HBO has Sesame Street and PBS has Sesame Street, but Apple isn't having Sesame Street. They're having a show called Helpsters, and it's the world of Sesame Street. Maybe Big Bird will be a guest at one point. You know, I think that was implied, but the main character is a female puppet named Cody, and her name is Cody because Helpsters teaches, well, kind of exposes preschool age kids to coding development. So I think it's really clever. As a parent, I would love for my kids to watch this TV show and feel good about it. And if there's any value in that, like exposure to that and curiosity, you know, that is created from that, I think it's great. And it fits Apple's vision of enriching lives through television and storytelling. Like, it isn't just storytelling. This is more about enriching lives, but I think it's like the modern equivalent of like, here are the ABCs, but it's like Apple goes on and on about saying everyone should learn to code. And that's debatable, but it's more yes than no. I think that it's not a bad skill. I think it's really clever. I think it's a modern take on like classic Sesame Street. It isn't Sesame Street, but it is that universe. And the whole Helpsters of the show, Cody teaching coding, I think is really clever. I'm happy about it.
Yeah, it remains to be seen how expansive their kids lineup is. Because we've seen rumors about, like, you know, they're going to get Snoopy and they're going to get some cartoons and stuff.
But yeah, Snoopy was on the slide too.
So. Yeah. Like, if everything is an educational thing,
some of the cartoons are adult cartoons.
Yeah. But if all the kids' stuff is just like, you know, hard educational, then realistically it's not going to fly because, you know, kids just want to have fun sometimes. But
well, my kids love Daniel Tiger, which is like the modern version of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And that's education focused. Then there's also something like Paw Patrol, which they love too, which is not really educational. It's just like good morals, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess we haven't really seen so much of like the Paw Patrol stuff, and it's more of Daniel Tiger stuff. You know, but that kind of remains to be seen.
It definitely doesn't seem like it's out of scope, but they haven't shown any of it, if you know what I mean.
Sure. Yeah.
Like they might, that would be some of the stuff they add every month. And then finally, there was the J.J. Abrams show with Sarah Bareilles, mm-hmm. which is called Little Voice.
Yep.
And it's about like a singer growing up in America and, you know, getting her start.
Do you know her?
And I do not know her.
I do not know her either. I feel like we should have known her, but
she was good though. I loved her.
She was good.
She even sung.
Yeah, she was the mid event, the 75% marker music talent of the event, and it was compelling. Just as a male, like, it did have the like sense of like, this isn't speaking to me. Like, this is about the struggle of like a woman in a big city, like, to become an artist. But I think it should appeal to everyone who wants to, you know, follow their dreams. It's just like that built-in instinct of like, this isn't for me, kicked in. But it was quality, and it was a pretty funny bit. And I just don't know her as an artist or an actor, I guess. But it looked quality. Like, and it fit, like, the way they pitched the service is like all across all genres. It wasn't like one genre, and it wasn't like just TV. They also say movies, even though we didn't really see that aspect of it yet. But it seemed like there is a type of show like this, and this one is filling that, you know, spot. So it's good.
Yeah, I am very bullish on like the content lineup. Obviously, it all depends on execution, and I think getting people to buy into $9.99, which again they didn't announce pricing, but yeah, if you just assume it's going to be $9.99, I'm a bit a question mark over the back catalog stuff. Like, I feel like people just want to buy like the such a big pillar of Netflix. It has so much stuff on there. You can basically just buy Netflix and be okay, if you know what I mean. Like. Mm-hmm. This, if they're only going to do exclusives, it's going to be many years before there's enough on there to be like, yeah, I can just buy this and be okay. So, because there's going to be some duds and there's going to be some great ones. But if they're not going to have any back catalog or licensed stuff at all, I think that's where they're going to have a bit of a stumbling block. But
yeah, it's really interesting. Like, Apple Music, I mean, we discussed this on previous shows recently, but Apple Music is like, you're taking existing music and the business is you want the music, you want to subscribe to it, so you have all of it and you don't have to buy it individually. And that's the business. You're not like, it isn't like Apple's producing music for people. this is that. Apple's producing TV shows. They're paying for it, and they're putting it in one catalog. And with Apple Music, the magic at the early days was like, we're going to make playlists and we're going to curate, and you're not going to find this collection of music in this organization anywhere else. You know, and then they added stuff like algorithm playlists with like favorites mix and friends mix and new music mix and chill mix. But, and those are really good. But the early pitch was like curation, tastemakers. In this case, they're not producing, or they are producing the content. It doesn't exist elsewhere. It may have, but it doesn't now. But it's still kind of that the product is that you're trusting Apple to have taste and, you know, put together a collection that's worth it, you know, versus like maybe one hit from Netflix and one hit from Hulu and one hit from Stars, HBO, whatever. Like, instead, I think they want everything good in one place. And so far, it seems like they can probably pull it off. We'll see, you know, but it's just a preview. I mean, they even called it a sneak peek, I think, but
yeah,
I think it's pretty promising. You know, you definitely didn't go away thinking like, oh God, Planet of the Apps part two, you know?
It's definitely definitely coming from a different direction. Like, mm-hmm. No doubt.
Yeah.
And then they had like a sizzle reel kind of trailer where they showed like basically all the stuff they talked about and a few others in, you know, second long clips, and just showing the star power, essentially, you know, putting big names to the screen of stuff that they've got shot and done.
Yeah.
And I watched that minute long thing. I'm like, yes, 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 I want to watch this stuff. But obviously it's not coming to the fall and we don't know the price.
Right.
But I feel like they're on a good track here. It's ad free. It's online and offline. And like you said, they're going to add new stuff every month. So
100 plus countries.
Yeah. 100 plus countries. And they've definitely got the right goal,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
My only question mark is the back catalogue, you know, the broadness of the stuff. But we will definitely see how it goes. And I am wanting to watch it. So I guess that's a good, you know, tick mark. And then finally, the Sony guys go off the stage. Tim comes back, says, this looks fantastic. And he says, we've got one more to show you. He didn't say one more thing. We've got one more.
One more big name or something like that. One more,
yeah, something to that.
Yeah. It was one more X, yeah.
And they have an intro video that was hyping it up.
The style of that was like the Thousand Knows, like, what was it, around iOS 7 or so, when they had this like white themed black text, a lot of animations. It was the exact same style. It was like part two of that video, but it was about Oprah.
The Thousand Knows one was better. Like, it was just better animated, but it was fine. And yeah. Is Oprah.
Yeah.
She comes out, obviously everyone's on their feet, you know, standing ovation. Da-la-la-la. She says some stuff about how she's got a great opportunity to change things. 1 billion pockets, y'all! And something.
It's like, Kiff, used to be Business Insider, Kiff Leswig, he's now CNBC. He took issue with the billion devices in your pockets, because I think it's like 900 million iPhones and then 1.3 or 4 billion devices active. I think it's fair to round up, but
and it's also enough
to estimate, you know, devices total plus in your pocket, it's fine. The before she came out, like the teaser video was like a minute long or so. So I saw people on Twitter think maybe it was going to be Barack Obama, like, because the way that they were framing it, I don't know. But like, if you follow the news, Apple had announced officially, like through a press release, that they had a content deal with Oprah to create content for them. So I think it was pretty obvious. And then also that Netflix has Barack Obama as producing content for them. So
yeah,
if you follow the news, it wasn't a surprise. But I guess if it's like your first exposure to all this stuff, it's like, what's going to happen here? But
I mean, the whole way through the 2 hours, I was just waiting for Oprah to come out. So I was like, here she comes.
Yeah.
And basically, she announces that she's working on two documentaries. Mm-hmm. One's called Toxic Labor, which is about like sexual harassment.
Yep.
Yeah, and then one's about mental health, which is unnamed. And yeah, they're going to be as part of Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, the shows that they did before the Oprah segment felt like it maybe not with the Helpsters, the Cody Coder stuff. Like, maybe that wouldn't have existed elsewhere. I don't know, but the other stuff was like, it would have been on like Netflix or HBO or you know, somewhere else if it wasn't on Apple TV Plus. But, and so that was like bought content. Like, they bought the rights to it. They helped, you know, produce it, et cetera. But the Oprah stuff looked like that might not have existed somewhere else. Like, maybe what she's doing for Apple, it isn't like she's retired. Like, there's the Oprah magazine, there's the Oprah TV network. But these, like these documentary specials, these series that are going to be on Apple TV Plus, feels like maybe those would not have existed if it wasn't for Apple. Like, I don't know how it happened behind the scenes. Like, maybe she was shopping around for, like, you know, a platform, and Apple was like, hey, we're in this business too. Or maybe it was like Apple just approached her and like, we love what you do. Come do this for us. Whatever you do, we're going to love it. And this is what she's come up with. And I kind of felt like maybe like that was what happened, was that the other shows were bought up and this was like thought up. Like, this is wholly original to Apple. They're all original content, you know, deals, but this is like made just because Apple's doing this service.
And yeah. Like Anne Berg and Ehrlich went to her and be like, do you want to do something in TV? We've got the budget. We can do something really cool, for instance, rather than Oprah trying to shop around for someone to pick it up. Yeah. And obviously, there's going to be other documentaries on the service, but these are the only two that they discussed at the event. Obviously, very serious. They're clearly part of the TV Plus stuff. The other thing that she announced was something to do with a book club. Now, being in the UK, I don't quite have the context of the importance of the Oprah book club. I just vaguely know that she did a book club thing. Yeah. And it's not as clear to me whether this is, again, going to be like somehow integrated in TV Plus, or where this is like going to be separate to like Apple Books or something. It wasn't as obvious.
It wasn't clear. Yeah.
So can you give me book club explanation?
Well, so my exposure to Oprah is, you know, there are movies that she acts in, but then there's the Oprah talk show, which was like from the 90s, maybe to the early 2000s. And I think a part of the show was that it was a book club element to it. And that Oprah's, like, there's like the New York Times bestselling list, but there's also like Oprah's recommendation is like also like, you know, a big deal for like pushing a new book. And that seems like, it's like classic nostalgia Oprah content, you know, but Apple has the bookstore and she'll have content on Apple TV Plus. So it feels like it fits well. The way she framed it was like the, imagine a live broadcast in all Apple stores, and then we assume on your device, if you're not in an Apple store, you can see it too. But that is like almost like a segment from her old TV show, or maybe what she does on her own network now. I don't know, but that would be video content. It's like her interviewing an author and discussing, you know, a book. It's what you know Oprah for, and so it fit. It's different from the documentary stuff, but it's Oprah content, and it seems to fit pretty well. So it kind of reminds me of like it was one hire from Netflix to Oprah's team for the Apple TV Plus service that we covered a few weeks ago, and the person hired from Netflix was involved in like David Letterman's interview show on Netflix. And so you could kind of see, however they distribute this, that it's kind of like that. But instead of just Oprah doing like a one-on-one interview with somebody, it's framed around the idea of book club.
Yeah, and it has some kind of Apple Store tie-in. They say they're going to stream it from the Apple Store or something.
Yeah.
And it probably, what probably happened is it'll be live at the Apple Store, and then if you want to watch it later, it's on Apple TV Plus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is neat. You have to buy.
You're definitely putting different amounts of content, like from the launch, you know, Apple's late to streaming, but like Netflix, they're producing a lot of stuff now, but in categories where it's not like live TV, or not live TV, but like you know, like interview style shows, those are still pretty rare for Apple or for Netflix. They have them. Some have started and ended, but in this case, essentially, Apple's starting out with that too. They think that's important to the service, not just to have, you know, TV series, dramas, comedies, etc., but also have like personalities and kind of almost like not like new style shows, but like magazine style shows, I guess. I don't know. So, yeah, it seems like the service is pretty well rounded. And the service name, Apple TV Plus, again, I love the Apple Arcade name. Channels is an okay feature name. News Plus, it's fine. Better than magazines, I guess. Apple TV Plus doesn't seem super creative, but if you've got to name it something, it's fine.
I think it's stupid that the TV service is lowercase, but then the hardware box is uppercase. Like,
yeah.
It just feels like such a weird way to differentiate those when they have the same base name.
Stylistically, it's all over the place. But
yeah,
the one thing that's clever about the name, though, is just from the event itself and maybe how they market it going forward, is like it's Apple TV Plus, and then they show the star of the show. And so it's like Apple TV Plus Oprah. Apple TV plus J.J. Abrams. Like, it's like celebrity endorsement, which is totally a marketing thing. Like, that's like, you know, marketing 101. Celebrity endorsements is like a type of ad. And in this case, it isn't like a TV ad. It's like a service, but you're kind of marrying the service to the stars. I mean, they're relying on not like up and coming stars, but stars that we already know, so far. And, I think it's clever that it's kind of Apple TV plus and then name who you like,
yeah,
you know, to kind of pitch it. So,
and I hope that as the service develops, they, you know, be more adventurous and bring in undiscovered talent, like not just named celebrity stars. Yeah.
But
for the launch, I get why they're doing it, right?
Well, and they did kind of address some of that in the Little America segment, where they talk about in one instance, one of the actors said that it was the first time he's been in every scene. He or she was in every scene of the show. Like, they've been like the minority in a show, you know, to kind of fill a role, but they've not been in every single scene. And so, like, it was something wholly new because of this Apple TV service. So, you know, I saw a lot of complaints online, you know, from cranky commentators of like, why is Apple doing TV? Like, what are they going to bring to this? Just cash grab. But I do think they did a really good job, if you paid attention, of saying how it is impactful and how it's not just, you know, here's some garbage, pay for it.
Yeah. Out of like all four things,
yes,
which one would you rank as like the one that's the cash grab garbage?
News Plus.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's not specially formatted. Like, it's not digital first. It's
just ripping PDFs and most of the time showing. If every item in the News Plus catalog was like well made, well, if every item was like what they demo with, you know, Wired or National Geographic, then it'd be different. That'd be like quality and exclusive. Yeah.
But we've,
you know, journalism,
totally
right?
Seen like when NewsCent was brand new, when Apple News was brand new, it's like, you can do all this fancy stuff, but no one always does, you know, it doesn't stick.
So. Yeah, and obviously there are economics reasons behind it, but I think at a very bare minimum, they should have every PDF have a basic text view, like a, you know, like a basic Safari reader, so you can change the text size, right, and not have to zoom in and out all the time. But at the moment, they don't have that. It's like very much, here's texture, here we go. And, you know, down the road, they'll probably develop it, but that's what it is today. So for me, that is definitely the one where it's like, here's a way for you to give us money.
Yeah.
The Apple Card is awkward in concept, but I feel like the execution is very on-brand and very Apple-y and, you know, financial health stuff. I feel like it's actually decent. The interest rate is probably slightly too high than normal, but it's not bad, and obviously there's no fees and other stuff. Yeah. So
the thing about the finance stuff was like 10 years ago, 10 years plus, the credit card situation was way worse. Like the way that you could hide the interest rate, there was regulation in the US passed where it needed to be like big bold print, 22% in a box that's like clearly labeled. It couldn't be like fine print. And at the time, you know, I worked at Sears, and there was a big push to sign people up for the Sears credit card. And we got new documentation like that was big bold print, and it felt, I mean, it was consumer friendly. It's like, and Apple's competing against that version of credit cards, so it's not as bad as it used to be, but they clearly think they can still do better than what, you know, the current like minimum requirement is.
And with Arcade, they're like carefully curating what's in there. They're actually like backing it, helping it happen, funding some stuff. Probably in the Arcade there are going to be some games that would never exist without Apple's money to make it happen, because it offsets the risk, right? Like, you don't have to find this money and invest in it and then it not work. I assume the Apple deals would be like, you know, we'll pay for this, and so if it really flops, it doesn't matter, because, you know, you don't have a debt to pay off with these game productions. And then TV, the branding and the content they've got, they've obviously got massive budgets behind it, everything looks beautiful, it's all kind of uplifty. We, you know, following the rumors, we didn't see any like hard-hitting blood or gore. Maybe they will add that down the road, potentially, if they are the best stories ever told, right? There has to be in there somewhere. Like, you can't be the best stories ever told not including blood or, you know, excessive swearing stuff. Like, that's just unrealistic. But, you know, family-friendly launch, it's very, very on brand. The news one is the one to me that feels a bit and doesn't quite meet those bullet points of attention to detail and easy to use, right? Yeah, right. Like, there it kind of falls down.
And generally,
the other ones
like,
feel much better.
I think if you just wanted the magazine stuff, the texture app was better organized and like laid out and everything. And that it now is because it's like when you combine services into one app, it can get really messy. Now you've got Apple News as it has been for the past few years, plus the Apple News Plus section, and it's very busy. Like it's not as clean as it could be. So that one feels kind of rushed. But I like your point though, that like Apple Music was super messy at launch, and by iOS 10, you wouldn't recognize the launch version in iOS 8.4 or whatever.
So, yeah. And we still see them doing renovations to it now. Like only the last week they changed up the browse tab.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
The big complaint I've said in the podcast before is how the browse tab, you tap, 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 tap everywhere. You have to go through so much hierarchy to get anywhere. Yeah. They've completely flattened that out. Like they're constantly working on music, and it's so much better now than it was originally. So as long as they have that train for this other stuff, then they're gonna be good. And I think they will. Like someone asked me on Twitter, do you think they're gonna do like a service event every year? And I said definitely. I mean definitely they will be iterating on these services. I think some people have the impression that this is like, oh, iPhone sales are down. Quick, right, let's do this thing once and we're done with it, right? Like, we've done it and then we'll come back to it, you know, in the next decade. Like, these are going to get more updates than the iPad mini, right? Like, they're on a proper course. They have teams behind them, backing them and iterating on it. They're not a one-and-done thing. Like, it will be like Apple Music, where there's constant refinement year over year.
And it's not that Apple's never done any of this stuff before. Like, Apple News Plus, they've been trying to tackle this since Newsstand, you know, and then Apple News, and they've experimented, and this is kind of where they're ending up now. With the Apple Card, they've done the Barclay Card before. This is, like, way more aggressive than that, and some, you know, much more compelling features, I think. But they've done that. And with the Apple Arcade is kind of like more new than anything else because of how they're doing it. But
it's another spin on the App Store business monetization model.
But yeah, it's an evolution of the App Store. And then the Apple TV Channels is an evolution of selling subscriptions, which they've done before. And then the Apple TV Plus service, that's the most new. But it's kind of like how they go from selling digital music in the iTunes Store, you know, songs and albums, to selling a streaming service. Well, I imagine there's a really similar parallel to the iTunes movies and TV shows store too, and that you know, streaming is the new thing with Netflix and competitors. And so, if they want to stay relevant, eventually the iTunes movies and TV store, show store, will not be what it once was, and that was once new. Well, now this is the new thing, so it's kind of the equivalent there too. So I don't think it's like. I mean, it's definitely not like, oh, we had a bad quarter or we missed guidance and now let's scramble. This is stuff that's been in the works for a while, and it's not, you know, you will see people say we're dealing with a whole new Apple now. I don't think so. I think it's
it's evolutionary.
It's evolutions of existing things that Apple's done already. Like Eddie Q hasn't just been wearing flip flops at Apple for nothing. Like he's been working on all this services stuff. Like it's his division.
Yeah, and they made this a services event, but they could have very easily mingled in, you know, the three hardware announcements last week into the event if they wanted to.
Watch
and the narrative out the other end would have been very different. It'd have been like, oh, this is more standard Apple. Here's some updates to the iPads and the AirPods, like plus some services stuff. And they obviously want to show the services side of their business, but I don't see it as them like, you know, like a sea change. It is evolutionary ultimately.
All right, anything more from the event?
I think that's good. I was just kind of overall disappointed that Arcade and News Plus do not News Plus, TV Plus do not have pricing information. Because for me, they're the ones that are most tied to Apple's own budget. Like, they don't have to pay anyone else, really. Like, they're paying themselves, especially on TV Plus. Like, it's literally they know how much they're going to spend on this. So, surely they should have the confidence of mind to know how much they can charge for it and not, just defer that.
I think the competitors to Arcade and TV Plus, so like, other video game services are like more what informs that than is like, this is, you want to charge as much as you can. You don't want to give it away. But you know, so it can't be like $50 a month. But but you also don't want to overcharge where people don't use it. So, there's a balance there, and maybe it's informed by, you know, what does Microsoft charge for their thing like this? What is Stadia cost, that kind of thing? And then also for, Apple TV Plus, streaming services are going up in cost right now. Like Apple can name their own price, but like every service is getting more expensive in some way, except for like on-demand Hulu, which is like falling out of favor. And that's why it's
like Netflix is racking up debt to pay for, you know, more content investment.
So Apple doesn't want to, they probably don't want to undercut you know, the others. They want to go to a price, even if it costs more than the others, for less content, that it's one price that they can live with for a while. Because we haven't seen we've seen lots of price hikes from Netflix, whether it's like 10% here, 30% here. You know, part of it's in October, part of it's in March, so it looks smaller, but it's still a big price hike. And there's no grandfathering in some of these cases. Same thing for Hulu. You've not seen that for Apple Music, and instead you see like ways to get it cheaper through, you know, carrier deals, university deals, etc. And so it wouldn't be weird if Apple TV Plus started at one price and went up over time, especially if they add more content to it and it feels like it's justified. But it also isn't something that you want to expect, you know. So you probably want to have a starting price that you can live with for a couple of years, you know. I agree with you. There were a lot of questions at the start of the show that didn't get answered. But all in all, I thought it was a great event, not just because I got to attend it. That was more, you know, havoc than anything.
I was definitely bracing for it to be bad, and it was not bad. It was way better than I expected it was going
to
be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was a lot of negative reaction to it. Like what is going on? This isn't an Apple event. But I was more entertained and interested and curious about things to come than like, what's the year-over-year update for the iPhone with the same design, you know, and some new features. So I thought it was more compelling than that.
Most of this event was more interesting than the iPhone XS part of the right. iPhone XS keynote.
Right. The watch was great, you know, but
yeah.
The XS part wasn't as interesting. And also there's, you know, they've always been involved in like in the arts and pop culture and everything with the iTunes Music Store. And then, you know, buying Beats and having that kind of lifestyle brand involved. This doesn't feel wholly new. It feels like a continuation of that, but it also feels like it goes with the times. Like, you know, there's only so much you can say about an iPhone, but pop culture is a living thing that we, you know, live with, and it's popular. Like, you know, so I think it's a good fit, and it shows that Apple isn't just, you know, doing boring stuff. I think it is very interesting. So, News will do. I'll do the trial. I don't think I'll pay for it. I might end up with a print magazine subscription before it's over with. Arcade, awesome for the family. I'm probably going to be on that. The channel stuff. I probably won't pay for channels like the channels app because it's like subscription overload. And I don't watch that much TV. But the TV Plus stuff, Apple TV Plus stuff, it looks really interesting. And I could see paying for that. Like I paid for Netflix for like a decade. And I don't now. Just because, just like looking at everything I pay for, I said, well, I'm not going to do that anymore. But I do pay for Hulu with live TV, which is like $45 a month, and it includes the Hulu catalog as well. And I could say Apple TV Plus, like based on what they've shown so far, content that looks good to see. Like if you watch everything and you're done with it, then that's it. But as long as they keep adding more stuff of the same caliber, if not better, then I'm interested. So I thought it was great. Last thing I want to say is, you know, we didn't expect air power at the event, but there was still air power news, during the week of the event. And that's because Apple decided to print the image of air power on the back of the AirPods charging case, the standalone wireless charging case that you can purchase for, what is it, like $70, $80?
And we had the website leak.
What was the website leak? You had the image?
The image, yeah. On the AirPods page. You could, they had a reference that wasn't visible, but if you looked in the code, you could find it on Australia and some other regions of a link to an image that is an updated version of what used to be there. Because before it would be an iPhone 10 and AirPods on a charge on the AirPower charging mat. Now it's the iPhone 10s and the AirPods on the charging mat.
Yeah. So the image was never visible on the website, but you could find it in the source code. You could find the URL for it and then bring up the image on its own.
Yeah.
And you could see where it was supposed to be, where they say, lay it down, charge it up.
In the CSS, it was basically, this is high equals zero.
right.
So it was hidden.
Yeah. And then there was a big to-do about it all because it was just the iPhone and the AirPods case, not the watch. And so people thought, maybe they're going to do AirPower, but no watch support, which is a bummer. But it was on the AirPods page, which always only had the phone and the watch because it was meant to show – or the phone and the AirPods – The watch page is what had all three, but on the AirPods page they just show the pods and the case for the pods and then the phone. So nothing new there. No reason to think they're not going to also support the watch if they ever launch. But the printing it. It was in text on the box for all of the new AirPods, which mostly had 2018 as the date on them. And then on the case box alone, in the back of it, it shows, it doesn't say the word, but it shows the outline of AirPower. So they've done this plenty with the XS manual and XR manual, and they're still not afraid to print things about AirPower, even if they can't release it yet. And I've seen the two big theories I've seen so far is that AirPower is either so close because they're releasing the new AirPods now, or so far away that they're just releasing the AirPods now because they don't know when AirPower will be ready. Two great theories that cover the whole
the complete
gamut,
opposite ends of the spectrum.
Indeed. So, quote says expect until late June or June. So maybe we'll see what happens, but. All right, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach, also Apollo Zach on Instagram. And Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZA Mayo.
And you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com with feedback. If you like the show, recommend it to a friend. Recommend us in Overcast or rate us in iTunes. It helps people discover the show so more people like you can listen. And it helps feed our egos too. With that being said, we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
We made it.
Woo!